Going once. I hear you on the keyboard.
Hello?
Ah, there you are.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Oh, my goodness. I'm sorry. There must be a time delay between my feed and whether or not I was coming through the phone. Okay. Dude, I am so sorry. I have been really hard at work tapping away, keeping up with this story. There's a lot going on.
You mean Pastor Jones?
Yes, yes. But first I have to ask a question. Do you have a gun on your desk?
No, but there's one within reach.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's another one of those exquisite Friday evenings here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia. And it's Friday. Yes, indeed. It is. And, you know, these are wistful Fridays, really, when you get right down to it, because when I was up at 5 o'clock this morning helping Ferg and Margie get ready to go to school and getting them on the bus to go, it was cold. And it's a reminder that that these days, well, like I said, it's a little wistful, because beautiful evenings like this will not long be the order of the day, as we, at least here in the hills, fall comes on fast. So we enjoy them while we can. It's a big night down in Huntington, West Virginia, as the Friends of Coal Bowl kicks off. Uy. It's going to be very difficult to enjoy my Mountaineers this year. I wish I could find some way to watch them without the ads. The Cole ads. And the John Racy ads. And the filthy Spike Maynard ads. Filthy Republicans wall to wall.
Virus updated.
Yeah, the virus databases. Yeah, what a time for you to do that. It's been a very interesting, old 24, 36, 48 hours or so. I've got the computer back up and running. It was sick last night. The computer takes more sick days than I do from this network. But that's another problem for another day. We will wait and let it decide when it wants the total wipe down and reload. Ugh, I can't wait for that not to happen. A little programming reminder, no shows Tuesday through Friday of next week. I will be away doing some training. Not training anybody. I'm getting some teaching. So we're waiting to see what the schedule's going to look like there. John Fox said he would have a look at seeing if he could fill a couple of those dates.
I hope he can, but if he can't, it's more than understandable because this is a working people's radio network. And you know what? Working people got to work. That's just how it works. How many times can I say work? Oh, Sparky, I have hit the Avast mute button. That's the problem. I do things and they don't stay done. But, you know, well, anyway, but anyway. It's Friday on the front porch. A beautiful Friday, as I said. Somebody's going to have to give me updates during the program as to the progress of the WVU-Marshall game. I will be running away from the screen the minute that the program is over to go and park myself in front of a television somewhere to watch it. What a weekend coming up in college football. Can't wait. I've got a particular interest in that wonderful old rivalry between Penn State and Alabama that goes down tomorrow night at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa. Okay, it's all right. You can pull the cotton out of your ears now. I'm done talking about sports, at least for the time being. Anyway, while I was gone last night, the whole Willie or won't he, Karan, the World Tour Gainesville, Florida thing went down, and I don't know. What's more to be said? Why we're not arresting this bastard is beyond me. But we discussed that Wednesday evening, didn't we? Perfectly legal to arrest. It's absolutely, because contrary to what people high and low think, not all speech is protected in this country. You want living proof of that? I can offer you living proof of the fact that all speech is not protected in this country. Great example. Breaking news. Today, or rather this past Tuesday, in Concord, North Carolina. It's very easy to say Concord, not New Hampshire. No. Concord, North Carolina. Tuesday, the FBI went in and arrested a 26-year-old Christian by the name of Justin Carl Moose. Moose, not Muslim. Justin Carl Moose. And he's been having conversations with an FBI informant and posting stuff to his Facebook page. Half of this is a little scary. The other half isn't. He is virulently angry at abortion doctors, President Barack Obama's health care plan, and then plans to build a mosque near Ground Zero in New York City. New York City! New York City! He called himself the Christian counterpart to Osama bin Laden. He said, and this is a quote, that he's learned a lot from the Muslim terrorists and have no problem using their tactics. Yeah, in the FBI affidavit, the FBI agents noted that he called himself the Christian counterpart to Osama bin Laden. On his Facebook page, he also wrote, "Whatever you may think about me, you're probably right." Describing himself, he said, "Extremist? Radical fundamentalist? Yep. Terrorist? Well, I prefer the term freedom fighter." And beginning in January, he started urging people to do violence with things like this. If a mosque is built... Okay, Justin Carl Moose of Concord, North Carolina. I guess I kind of got to use the voice. If a mosque is built on Ground Zero, it'll be removed. Oklahoma City style. Tim's not the only man out there knows how to do it. I've learned a lot from the Muslim terrorists, and I have no problem using their tactics. If you go to visit him at his home, where he isn't right now, or maybe he's bailed, you know what? They probably set bail at $1.50, and he's back on the street. If you go over to the Moose family home,
Something tells me this guy did not graduate from Wasamata U in Frostbite Falls, Minnesota. If you go over to the Moose family home, there's a one of those yellow Gadsden flags, you know, the don't tread on me flag. It's hanging over the door at the house. Nice place. He professes himself to be a member of the Army of God. The Army of God is described as, quote, an underground network of domestic terrorists who believe that the use of violence is appropriate and acceptable as a means to end abortion. Their mission statement, their manual, who knew the Army of God needed a manual? What's God need with a starship? The Army of God's manual says that it intends to, quote, officially declare war on the entire child-killing industry. The Pentagon, you mean? Oh, no, he means doctors attending to the health care needs of women's insides. Oh, that child-killing industry. Not the child-killing industry that's housed in the Pentagon, that's with the aid and comfort from our domestic enemies on the right wing, in conjunction with people like Dick Cheney and George Bush and kind of sleazy Rice and Donald Rumsfeld and that crowd. No, he doesn't mean them. No, he doesn't mean the people who killed a million already born human beings in Iraq with their filthy little illegal war that they started of their own choosing in 2003. He doesn't mean that child-killing industry. He means the zygote excision industry, the blastocyst, the blastocyst removal industry. We're not talking about, this is another one of those, and my God, you want to talk about pasty-faced and doughy and white. This is a pasty-faced, doughy white guy. He's due to appear in federal court Monday. If convicted on all counts with which he is charged, he faces up to 20 years in prison, a fine of $250,000 as well. Despite his arrest, Mr. Moose, man, how you slid, Mr. Moose. You were so funny working in tandem with Bunny Rabbit on Captain Kangaroo. What happened? Still, no, if he's convicted on all the charges, 20 years in prison, fine of $250,000. But Mr. Moose, I still can't say that, okay. What's his name? Justin Doofus Moose? No, Justin Carl Moose. We won't call him Mr. Moose anymore. It just doesn't work for me. No, in a post taunting the federal authorities monitoring him, he referred to him as all the feds watching me, monitoring him. Oh, wait just a damned minute. He is already out on bail. He's out on bond. He's out on bail. This guy wants to start a civil war in the United States. He's an admitted domestic terrorist. But since he is pasty-faced, doughy, and white, he walked! Can anybody do some research on this guy? Can we find out what his bail was set at? It sure would be nice to know who went that bail, wouldn't it? I mean, I'm extrapolating from the language of the story here, but it says, in a post taunting the federal authorities monitoring him, so that's after the arrest, and he's being monitored, which to me says that he's got an ankle bracelet, one of those electronic fence affairs. Pity we can't put a shock collar on this rotten little bastard. All the feds watching me, you can't stop what's in motion. Even if you bring me in, my men will continue their mission. Furthermore, I will not go peacefully. Do you really want another Waco? Well,
What do you want?
The guy's a Christian. He's a Christian fundamentalist. There really isn't much difference between him and bin Laden or Zawahiri or whoever happens to be the Al-Qaeda number two until we kill the Al-Qaeda number two and there's another Al-Qaeda number two. There's no difference. But he was arrested. Because of, and let's get this clear, because of his speech. His name is Justin Carl Moose. He was arrested because of his speech. There was nothing in the entire story to suggest that he had been caught bombing anything or planting any bombs or strapping any dynamite around his waist or renting any Ryder trucks and filling them up with the same kind of explosives that are used to the tune of about 6.5 million pounds per day all across Appalachia, namely ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosives. No. No evidence of that whatsoever. The only evidence was of his speech. And this should be a gentle reminder that not all speech is protected. You'll notice, if you've paid attention to this program over the years, that I've never called for anybody to go out and shoot anyone else, strangle them, cut them, boil them, bean them, bake them, or burn them. No. A, that's because I'm nonviolent. I don't adhere to violence as a means of problem solving. And B, it's because the calling on people to engage in violence is, everybody, come on, illegal. It's illegal. It is not protected speech within the parameters of the First Amendment. And you know what? The FBI was right in this. Now, I'm sure that the anti-women's insides crowd is out there screaming and hopping up and down like the little monkeys around the monolith in 2001 and hollering and hooting about how their First Amendment rights have been violated. And that, they're going to send him off to a FEMUR camp. We tried to tell you about that Muslim Negro in the White House. Oh, Jesus. I'm sure they are. But that only shows the profundity of their ignorance. Because, and let me say it again, this kind of speech is not protected any more than the speech of that freak in Florida is protected, or now the freak in Tennessee who says he's going to torch him some Koorans too, or the freaks in Westboro Baptist Church who have taken up the torch, literally, I suppose, and say, well, us too, you know, just a bunch of little nasty fundamentalist Christian attention prostitutes. It's all illegal. If the FBI can figure that out with regard to Justin Doofus Moose, or Carl, I'm sorry, Carl, then one would think they can figure it out with these other clowns as well. But maybe not. Maybe not. But that's not all we've got in the, that's not all that's in the hopper for this evening. By the way, have you ever been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room? Jump right in. We've got a good crowd starting up this evening, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation in there. It's free, of course, and registration is quite easy. Jump right in anytime. Don't be shy. No, there's other stuff on the plate this evening. You know, half the time when the computer goes down, it's almost like it's got some sort of built-in sort of socio-psychic seismograph in it. Because as soon as I'm not, just as quick as I'm not able to go on the air, something will hit the fan. In this case, it hit the fan in San Bruno, California.
I suppose you're all up to speed on this, right? You know what happened last night. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, with a thunderous roar heard for miles, a natural gas line explosion ripped through a San Bruno neighborhood Thursday evening, sending up a geyser of fire that killed at least one person and injured more than 20 others, and igniting a blaze that destroyed 53 homes and damaged 120 more, authorities said. That's 53 families homeless now. It may be 173 families homeless now because we don't know the extent of the damage to the 120 others that were damaged, according to authorities. The wind-whipped blaze leaped from structure to structure in the neighborhood near Skyline Boulevard and Sneath Lane west of Interstate 280, raging unabated for almost an hour as emergency crews rushed in and residents streamed out. The central ball of fire, fed by the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, raged past nightfall before abating. By then, houses on several blocks and thick stands of trees were engulfed in flames. A gas line. From Pacific Gas and Electric. Really? Not kidding. Jim Ruan is the mayor, and he said a terrible tragedy has fallen on our city. Say a special prayer for those people. This is going to be a long haul for this city. Millbrae Fire Chief Dennis Hogg said more than 100 people were in evacuation centers. Firefighters hadn't been able to get into the area to search for people, he said. We couldn't get close to the line. We are still not able to access the area fully. And this was a story from, you know, earlier today. People thought it was an earthquake. Only it wasn't. It was brought to you by corporate America. And here's my question. How are the Repiglicans going to respond to this one? Because, you see, the gas line in question was installed in 1948. Now, tell me if I've got that wrong, but that would make that gas line 62 years old. Have I got that? 62 years old. Barack Obama the other day talking about the fact that we need to rebuild America and that we need to rebuild America's infrastructure. You know, if a fellow was a little more superstitious and a little less dogmatically Repiglican, he might look up and go, you know, the fact that we came out and opposed that infrastructure renewal plan that President Obama mentioned the other day, and then this immediately happened in San Bruno, you'd almost think that God was trying to get a message to us. But no. Because Repiglicans are incapable of that kind of, well, thought. And that's largely because Repiglicans are incapable of thought. They merely respond to the marching orders that they're fed by the likes of John Boehner and Eric Cantor and Chinless Mitch McConnell and that crowd. So what's the Repiglican Party left with by way of a response to this horrible, horrible corporate tragedy in California? Shit happens. That's all the Repiglican Party has. Act of God. Pacific Gas and Electric, I guess they were just too... Anybody out there on the left coast, are you guys customers? Are they driving around in model in early Ford Model A pickup trucks because they're just too broke to take care of gas lines in an earthquake zone that were laid in 1948? They just can't. You know, pipe's expensive, Bob. When's the last time that Pacific Gas and Electric paid a dividend on their share prices. Just curious. Because you know what? Maybe the money that went into that share price dividend, maybe that could have gone to replacing gas lines that have been in the ground since 1948. Just saying. Or maybe it has something to do with the anarcho-Randian model that California began following with what? Proposition 13? Could that be it? Is this latest horror in San Bruno another manifestation of good old-fashioned repiglick and drown the government in the bathtub politics? Oh, wait. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. The official GOP repiglick and memo is just now rolling in. No, Bob! That explosion means Barack Hussein Obama ordered an event to sway public opinion, and Boxer got the assignment to light the fuse. I make it even money. The Savage Wiener puts this out on his show running today. That from David in Tennessee, who occasionally takes one for the team, but I won't even ask him. No. Yeah, I'm sure. You know, it was probably some liberal sleeper cell. Maybe it was William Ayers. Or the new Black Panther Party. Never mind the fact that they haven't been picked up by the FBI, but Justin Doofus Moose has in Concord, New North Carolina. Sorry, I keep wanting to say New Hampshire. Sorry. David telling me, when I had business dealings with folks there, I said Concord, and nobody corrected me. Concord. I don't know. I just know it's in North Carolina and not New Hampshire, but I keep trying to put it in New Hampshire. But I'm sure that New Hampshire has no interest in having a citizen named Justin Doofus Moose. God Army. God Warrior. Hoo-ah! Lock and load. Protect the unborn. Ron in Raleigh, down toward some, well, obviously closer to Concord, North Carolina, than I am. Okay, well, this is good news. Ron says it appears he is still in the gentle, loving hands of the law. Update: Concord man charged in plot to bomb abortion clinic. There's the violence. Charged with providing information to create explosives he believed would be used to blow up a North Carolina abortion clinic. Of course, he gave this to an FBI informant. These guys are everywhere, aren't they? You know what? If somebody comes up and says, "Hey, buddy, you got any idea how I could blow the door off the beer joint down there so as I can get in and get me some free Budweiser?" You know what? Don't tell him that you... No, don't give him any ideas, because odds are he's FBI. And you know what? You don't have any business thinking that way anyway. No matter how thirsty you are. Down to the sack and suds. Let's see. Let me just browse this real quick, like what came in from Ron. They're not saying what city the so-called abortion clinic was in, except that it was in North Carolina. How about, can we have a little journalism moment here? Just a little one. How about we stop calling them abortion clinics? Because that's not all they do. They are women's health centers. Granted, for instance, urologists will occasionally perform vasectomies on men, but they also deal with other things dealing with, you know, men's urinary tracts. That's why they're urologists. They're not sperm killers. Just a gentle memo to the journalism industry. Women's Health Center. Just saying. So, let's see. Yeah, he's incarcerated at the Alamance County Jail and will appear in federal court again on Monday. Well, I feel a little bit better about that. I don't like the idea of this guy walking on bond. I still wonder how it is he's taunting the feds. I don't know. Maybe they get computers in the Alamance County Jail. Meanwhile, I will wait to see, and you will wait to see it, we will wait to see or hear how long it takes before there's a panel discussion on Radio Rwanda about what a domestic terrorist this clown was. Because it didn't take Radio Rwanda a day to bring on the anchor baby, Michelle Malkin, to discuss domestic terrorist James J. Lee, clearly influenced by Al Gore. This guy, though, this guy's in the Fox demographics. You know what you're going to get from Radio Rwanda? Crickets. And speaking of Fox, Radio Rwanda. Speaking of that bunch, I have another little helpful hint from Brother Bob. And this one goes out to people for whom I have a profound degree of respect. Media Matters for America. I got one of their blast emails earlier today. And it's asking for money. They need to raise $35,000 right away. Because they want to run an ad. In particular, they don't want to run just any ad. They want to run this ad. Oh, come on. There we go. They want to run this ad.
And now, a special message about a story that's not yet been covered on Fox News Primetime, brought to you by Media Matters for America. News Corporation believes in the power of free markets, and the Republican Governors Association's pro-business agenda supports our priorities at this most critical time for our economy. And that's why News Corporation has donated $1 million to oppose Democratic candidates this November. Paid for by Media Matters for America.
That costs $35,000 to run one time in the Bill O'Reilly Show. Okay. Now, this maybe you disagree. This is just a piece of friendly advice coming from old Bob, hillbilly elitist. Why are you doing this? Okay, that was a question. That wasn't advice. Next Tuesday, Media Matters for America is going on the air to let Fox viewers know about a story the network has largely kept them in the dark about, the $1 million donation to a Republican campaign armed by Fox's parent company, News Corp. The message goes on. We can't let Fox continue to pose as a news network while functioning as a political operation. It starts by letting Fox viewers know just how much money the network they're watching has dumped into campaigns to elect Republicans and defeat Democrats. Fox News rejected the ad three times. Only after it was confronted by another news outlet did Fox agree to run it. You can help us put it on the air and offer 30 seconds of truth in the midst of Fox 24/7 propaganda machine. It will cost approximately $35,000 to air the ad on the O'Reilly Factor next week. Hundreds like you have helped us raise the funds to air it. Will you please put us over the top? You know what? Rather than airing this on Fox, may I suggest that if they insist on airing it, it should probably be aired on CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, CBS, NBC, ABC, I don't know, maybe, you know, air it on Nihao Kailan on Nickelodeon or something. Well, why would you air it on Fox? Well, Bob, we want the Fox audience to find out. Come on, who watches it?
This is Radio Rwanda we're talking about here. I mean, these are people who watch it while they're sharpening their metaphorical machetes. Really? Fox News done give $1 million to the Republican Governors Association? Damn! I'm disappointed in them. Why didn't they give two? Don't you... I mean, come on. Right? I'm proud of me. I'm proud of Fox News Corp giving $1 million to beat them communists this year. By God... It's bad enough we got a Muslim in the White House that wasn't even born in America. Somebody's got to stand up for freedom and justice. I knowed all along that great American, that Rupert Murdoch, was the man to do it. Here's all stuff. Jesus, Fox News apparently hires, get this, did you catch this? That sort of little, just made me go, dude. News Corp hires North Korean game designers. No, really. They software code writers to build widgets and stuff for Fox News. As you remember, it's a brand name, not an actual description of product. To build their build like website games or widgets or whatnot. Yeah, North Koreans, really. But I don't know. I saw this thing from Media Matters come through today, and again I say this, in all kindness. This is money thrown down a rat hole. This is money being solicited from people who may only have it $1 or $2 or $5 or $10 to give at a time. And this is not the front end of some sort of me doing a fundraising pitch. Maybe we'll do that later, but not now. People work hard for their money, and they're working harder for their money now than they've ever had to work in their lives. Yeah, they sure News Corp turned it down 3 times. Cock-a-doodle-doo. But they're in the money business. They'll take the $35,000 and they'll run laughing to the bank. Turning it down 3 times was just another way to make Media Matters salivate a little bit more about having to run it. They've turned it down. We've definitely got to run this. Oh, we got to run this. I love those guys. They do some of the best work out there. I mean, they've got people, I mean, you talk about taking one for the team. They've got people that listen to Rush Limbaugh for 3 hours every day. They got people that listen to Glenn Beck for 3 hours every day and once on and an hour on TV. They got people that listen to the Savage Wiener for 3 days every day and sit there and do transcripts and descriptions. There's not enough money to pay me to do that. I'd file for workers' comp after a day of it. I mean, Media Matters does magnificent work. And they're a nonprofit, and they have to scramble for their cash. This is not an appropriate use of donor cash. It's not really an ethics issue. It's a smarts issue. It's like political advertising on TV. Democrats out there trying to get elected, especially the ones we love the most, the good progressives, have no choice but to throw vast, copious quantities of cash down a rat hole. Spending money with media outlets that hate them in the first place. Why would we want to do any more of this than is absolutely necessary? So, just a thought. Just a thought. I guess they're locked into this, but I really don't want to see a bunch more of this. Because you're not going, Media Matters is not going to educate
the Radio Rwanda audience. Radio Rwanda hasn't had to do news stories about it because most of their demographic already knows about it from somewhere else and is mighty proud. Because Fox News is fighting off the communists. Them liberals. Them liberal Islamo-fascist communists, the worst kind. And it's a little depressing to see that one. Not criticizing Media Matters in any way, except to say that I think their efforts could be better shifted elsewhere. Inform, you know, and that's the point. Inform people who will value the information. This information is going to have no value whatsoever to the people who watch Radio Rwanda. I don't think so. So that's where we start with tonight's Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. Your phone calls are welcome. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 on your nickel. BobKincaid@gmail.com is the email address. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Head on RadioNetwork.com. The Horn. I'm Bob.
Father, where's his Sunday best? Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around.
Folks in San Bruno, there's no place like home, and we want you back in them as quickly as can possibly be done. This is The Horn. It's Friday on the Front Porch, And let's, well, no, from the email bag, Corey from Louisville writing in, he says, you know, with regard to that gas explosion, it would behoove the Democrats running for election to bring it up in every debate they have with their opposition. I'm sure that watching the idiotocracy known as the modern Republican Party hem and haw and not answer the question should convince the common folk that sometimes accidents happen, but sometimes accidents can be prevented. Looking at you, Jack Conway! Go Big East, says Corey in Louisville. And, Michael in Sebastopol says, with regard to the media matters, he says, one buy at Radio Rwanda will get it played 2,000 times at the Horn MSNBC, etc. Remember Willie Horton? I hope that's the case, Michael. I really do. With regard to PG&E, Michael says, lousy infrastructure up here in West Sonoma County. Nothing like San Bruno, thank goodness. Sometimes the electricity goes out for 2 weeks. It's unhappy, but not hellfire. And how about that? They are a public utility, right? I mean, they're there to serve the public. You know, kind of like on the monopoly board. You know, you buy the electric company, you get the monopoly on all four of those. You're not going to get rich, but there's a steady stream of income. These things are not supposed to be maximum profit generators. But that's the problem. Modern anarcho-capitalism sees them that way. Here's the hint. You're only going to see them more and more that way. And just as, you know, just as I expect the Republicans to respond to San Bruno by saying, ah, God's will, you know, they'll probably try to just be quiet about it and holler about Muslims and so forth. Or, you know, mosques that aren't mosques. They'll be as quiet as they were on the topic of whether or not it's evil to, you know, burn somebody else's holy books. Crickets again. Yeah, Marty's saying, no, PG&E is a for-profit corporation. I understand that. So is my power company. But they are supposed to be highly regulated with regard to their rate structure and their fee structure, because these are things that it is deemed that it is difficult to live without. And therefore, they're not supposed to be allowed to bring the full forces of predatory market economics to bear on us. That, I guess that was my point. Maybe I was less than clear. Anyway, on we go to the telephones. But maybe not there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, well, would you like a couple paragraphs that are supremely ironic?
Sure.
Okay, this is a press release dated June 16th of this year, ironically enough, from San Francisco. PG&E Corporation today declared its second quarter 2010 regular cash dividend of 45.5 cents per share on the corporation's common stock. The dividend is payable on July 15, 2010 to shareholders of record on July 30, 2010. In addition, PG&E Corporation's utility subsidiary, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, today declared dividends on all outstanding shares of preferred stock for the 3 months ending July 30, 2010. The dividends will be payable on August 15, 2010 to shareholders of record on July 30th.
And do we have any idea what the total, before it got broken down on a per share basis, of that profit was?
Well, they only give it per share.
What was the per share again?
For the common stock, it's 45.5 cents. And you're talking about millions of shares.
Yeah, I mean, that's so you would have to kind of expect that the profit was in the millions of dollars. All those profits, but see, this is the funny thing, Susan. No, this is the really not funny thing, Susan, about the explosion. People had been reporting that they were smelling gas for 3 weeks.
Oh, I'm not. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
They were smelling gas for 3 weeks, And what's more, they were the Pacific Gas and Electric told some of them, well, you know what you need to do if you're smelling that gas? You need to close your garage door. That's what you need to do. Close that garage door.
You need to get in the car and run like hell.
This is just corporate predation.
Yeah, I put a one line post when the story first showed up on Huffington Post yesterday. Can anyone spell infrastructure?
There you go.
Yeah, which the Republicans have been totally ignoring since dear old St. Ronnie of Reagan got in. Infrastructure? What's that crap? We don't need it. Well, tell those, by the way, the death toll is up to a minimum of 6. Tell those people who fried in that fire that they don't need infrastructure.
Among other things, the explosion cut off access to water, which made the fire even harder to fight.
Yeah, and what I don't understand is I thought these were more or less controllable, you know, where you could cut off the gas supply from a distance. Apparently, it's not working.
Probably, don't you expect that it probably took out the ability to do that? Because, again, this is a pipe that was laid in 1948.
Well, the thing is, okay, now I'm just going by the area I grew up in, which was fairly modern. And what they did was, for these gas lines, was, yeah, you could have a gas leak. And it could even explode. But if necessary, they're more or less worked on the concentric ring principle. Sooner or later, you're going to get to a point where you can starve that gas, where the gas gets shut down, and then the fire dies. You may have to go 2 or 3 miles up the line, and a lot of people will be without gas. But then again, if the alternative is exploding, I'll go without.
Well, Susan, here's another interesting fact for you, courtesy of Caroli over at crooksandliars.com. Caroli noting in his story about this, this is a company that spent $46 million to buy a California ballot initiative in the primary to keep municipalities from maintaining their own utilities.
Exactly. Can anyone?
So they had $46 million laying around for that, and on top of that, they were able to declare a 46-cent per share common stock dividend.
Not to mention the preferred stock, which is even more expensive.
Right, that's going to be nice.
And you're talking major money there, repair pipeline? Who cares? We don't need to.
Right.
Sooner or later, the silly things wear out. You know, you just can't avoid it. Time takes its toll. You can put in the best pipeline in the world, and sooner or later, it will go.
It's one of those things that needs fixing. And as Caroli notes, the cylinder that blew out is just one of many old deteriorating lines. One of many.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah, because that whole area is just basically, it was the baby boom, you know, when they were building.
That's 1948. You know, that's that. Everybody's coming home from the war. We're building subdivisions as quick as we can.
My husband and I were paint contractors. We used to call them blow-and-go jobs. So blow the paint on and run like hell before the paint dried and everything went,
Yeah, because the houses under them weren't so great either.
Exactly. They were put up fast and cheap. craftsmanship? You got to be kidding.
And for those who want to follow the story, there's a hashtag on Twitter, San Bruno Fire.
Mm-hmm. I do have one other comment about one other subject. And I'm not going to mention a name, that idiot in Florida.
Yes.
Why is it that in entire story, no one has mentioned the word extortion?
Well, now that the quid pro quo aspect of the thing with the they're going to move Park 51, and my goal has been accomplished. I don't know if it fits technically within the statute for extortion.
According to the dictionary, it does.
Well, but the dictionary is not the legal code of the state of Florida or the United States.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, all I'm saying is, guys, you don't need to worry about the First Amendment. Just look at the criminal code under extortion.
Well, along the same lines, yes, as the fire code. But I don't know. Extortion would be really, really tough. My sense is. Yeah, my sense is extortion would be very, very difficult, simply because there's entirely too much intent there, and he would holler about his religion all day long. My intent was only to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, just like it says in the Bible. And, by the way, Marty telling me, according to the San Francisco Chronicle story, it took PG&E more than 2 hours to get the natural gas shut off.
Oh, good Lord, you're kidding me. 2 hours?
Yep.
Oh, there's going to be people sued like the... Oh.
And the funny thing, you know, that's one of the problems with being a Democrat, is we respond to the other side's talking points so almost automatically, Susan. What I'm saying here, what you're saying, and say, look at them Democrats, say, them liberals, they'll use anything in the world for their own political gain. They're politicizing this. We can't play the blame game right now. We've got to take care of people. Well, the problem is, what they call the blame game, we like to call establishing and fixing liability.
Exactly. Because, you know, some of these people, there are dead people here, and there are people who are in horrendous pain in burn units. I can't think of anything worse. Running up huge, monstrous medical bills, whose lives have been wrecked. And somebody is going to have to cough up. That simple.
The news story, Marty just sent it in. He said, the news story says, putting out a big natural gas fire is a bit like trying to swat down a barn fire with a squirt gun, experts say. It's just about impossible to do it quickly. The best way to attack a blaze from a ruptured gas line, such as the one that destroyed a San Bruno neighborhood Thursday night, is to crimp off the fuel source enough to be able to douse it with chemical retardant, fire industry guidelines say, but until then, firefighters are initially stuck trying to contain the damage. The trouble is that in a street gas line, the pressure of the fuel whooshing through the pipe and the volatility of the gas is too much for firefighters to handle. That's what appeared to be the case for 2 hours after Thursday's explosion, while the flames jumped from home to home. In something that big, you can't put the gas out, said Albany Fire Chief Mark McGinn, who sent a strike team Thursday evening to help in San Bruno. If it's a small line, like from a house, you might cap it, but a house line has maybe half a pound PSI in it. In a street line, it's more like 200 PSI.
And it's like what you get out of the tail end of a rocket once you hit the ignition switch. You got one, your only choice is get out of its way. You can't stop it. You can't cap it. You just get out of the way. And that's all these people were able to do from the pictures I saw. The lucky ones, they were able to, run like crazy. They lost everything they had, with the exception of their lives.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, have yourself a wonderful weekend, Susan. Thank you very much.
How's Agnes?
Oh, she's doing better. Better. Every now and then I get out the Thorazine blow dart, put one in her neck, and she goes down and rests for a little bit.
You tell her I told her to, yeah, she is to rest.
Oh, we can tell her that until we are all collectively blue in the face, Susan, but.
Yeah, well, I will get out the voodoo doll if she doesn't.
You might oughta. You might have to.
Have a nice weekend.
You take care. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that is News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Why didn't Media Matters buy the gold-plated microphone instead?
Yeah, because the EIB is probably much more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, but that's exactly what I'm talking about, you know. And I guess I'll name the other site, but another site that I go to is just like that. They think just on those terms, antiwar.com, even though it is funded partly by Pat Buchanan, and there's always a Jewish, anti-Jewish slant to it that I hope people know when they read the headlines and stuff. That's one of the reasons why I don't jump into the whole, the neoconservatives, they are to blame for 9/11, all of that, because it's already framed in the direction of being anti-Semite, the people that are driving the lines, especially people like Pat Buchanan and so forth. But yeah, they have on their site, they're always saying, we need $70,000 this quarter, and we can do it. And I'm thinking, they don't really specifically tell what they need the $70,000 for in that amount, and it seems to come quicker and quicker each quarter. And it's like, Jesus, how do you guys are just totally eating through money like that. And that's a problem on the progressive side with a lot of these organizations. I'm not saying anti-war is progressive or anything like that, but I mean, yeah, I'm seeing that more and more, Bob. And what I'm saying is take that money and build it for the parade and something like a Fighting Bob Festival. Pull your money together and stop going crazy over these commercials that nobody gives a shit about.
You know, I am a regular visitor to Bartkopf's site, bartkopf.com.
Right.
And he had a comment on the latest page. I think it was yesterday. I didn't see it until today because of the obvious problems involving a certain sick computer here. But I was looking at it today, and I saw this one note that he made. It says, George Soros gives $100 million to Human Rights Campaign.
Yeah.
And bless his heart, there has been no one sharper or snarkier or more on point for well over 10 years on the interweb tubes than Bartkopf. And he said, you know, hey, George, that's great. Next time, give Human Rights Campaign $99 million, and give ten bloggers a share of the last million. We actually get things done. And I sat there. You know, it's the truth.
It is the truth.
Because there's some stuff that just goes up in smoke. And you know, again, I feel really uncomfortable criticizing this move by Media Matters. And, you know, here I am, just a little pissant guy with a microphone. But giving ever, for any reason, giving News Corp liberals' hard-earned dollars is kind of a slap in the face, isn't it?
But you know, this is the thing. They're thinking in terms of, I can already picture it in their offices. They're already thinking, Bob, in terms of, this is for the greater good, guys. I know it's News Corp. You know they're thinking that. This is for the greater good. I know this money, I know it seems like a lot, but we can get this fairly quickly, and then we'll go back on, and we'll go back to providing for our viewership in a more professional manner, or whatever. And I think that's why I'm not so much scolding these organizations, but I think they do need to be told. If anyone's listening at Media Matters, you do need to be told that when the movements are in a crisis, when the progressive and the liberals are in a crisis like they are now, And you know, Bob, if you look around, I mean, I've just been listening to the ads on right-wing radio. Holy cow. I mean, if this is anything that is coming for what's coming for in the election and all of this sticks, like I think it's going to stick, we're in for a world of pain and a world for hurt, and that's why we need that parade now.
The parade metaphor has caught on with you, hasn't it, David?
Yeah, I mean, Tom's saying it. I think a lot of people are saying it, and like I said, there needs to be like a something similar to the Fighting Bob Festival. Maybe Horn listeners can pool our heads together, and we can come up with something that it will be a timely event like this. But yeah, there needs to be an alternative to that. And the other thing that really struck me, really made me just like shake my head was. Have you heard the CNN reaction to the guy in Florida?
No. I'm almost afraid.
Well, they said they actually came out and they had an anchor person. They said, you know, I guess we could have handled this story differently. It's like a slap to the forehead right there. And then Anderson Cooper comes in and says, well, we had to cover it. And I was like, oh, man. You had to cover a loon. And you know, Bob, that made me thinking. I was looking at the Take Back the Media site. Monday, I'm going to spend time calling up these networks and saying exactly what I feel that these networks are doing, which is incitement of riots. And this is ridiculous. I mean, these people need to be shut down now. Not 10 minutes from now, not 15 minutes, not a month from now, now. And these networks are, I mean, to me, these networks are so, these networks are so guilty. Especially, they keep on following with these stories, and then they just let, did you see they just let that Phelps guy back in now?
Let him back in where?
Well, you know, the story is that.
Yeah, they're gonna, even if he doesn't, they're gonna.
Right, there's like four or five other churches.
Right, and one creepy old bastard in Tennessee.
Right. And you know the news networks are going to cover these guys. And it makes you look around and say, is this really the direction you want to go? You're willing to play with this many people's lives for the quick ratings that you're going to get from this?
You know, I saw a little coverage of the coverage, David.
Yeah.
And I saw mention of the fact that the Associated Press had already told its reporters, Under no uncertain terms, if these things go down, were they to publish any photographs of it? How about don't cover it?
That's a start. And you know, they already have one casualty from the Afghanistan protest. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
Yeah, so we already have one casualty to this crap. And you notice that probably the news networks aren't going to cover this because there are a lot of people in those newsrooms, Bob. I know they have a conscience and I know they're ashamed. But somebody's going to need to speak out there pretty soon because there's going to be a whole lot more that are going to be dead on the ground. And you can't go to Condoleezza Rice saying we had no way of knowing. Yes, you did. You knew these people are loons. You know they're part of the loon and nutty. Stop covering them. I mean, it is not that hard. You can find another story. For God's sakes, Floyd Mayweather and his girlfriend had a spout today.
Oh, my God, no.
Yeah, yes. And, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, there's the Britney Spears thing with his bodyguard. Just go back to that. I don't appreciate it. But in terms of what the alternative is, I don't like this route. This route is – did you hear about the Kraft shooting today?
No.
See, this is another thing that people don't – I mean, they're gonna ramp up this story, and if they don't ramp up this story, Bob, they're gonna ramp up another story. I mean, a Muslim woman who was working at the Kraft factory shot up a
like Kraft Foods.
Yeah, and I think she killed two people. Let me see. And so she's accused of gunning down with a .357 Magnum just minutes after she'd been suspended. She's accused of killing two co-workers and critically injuring a third at the Kraft plant in northeast Philly. And one of the co-workers says he called the alleged shooter very spiritual. But you see, they're going to use stories like this, the ramp up, the fact that she's a Muslim, the fact that she went a little haywire. Like I said, people, the culture war is here, and it's coming, and they're going to use this Muslim excuse. And you know, Bob, the other thing that we need to understand is these people that are inciting riots. To me, one of the biggest culprits. I know a lot of people like talking about the politicians, but I ignore all those people because I look at those as all as distractions. One of the main culprits, and I'll say his name, is that guy Robert Spencer at Jihad Watch.
Ew.
He's putting out lies, Bob. I mean, he's putting out lie after lie after lie because they want to incite one of the biggest culture wars that they've ever seen so they can sell their Islamophobe porn nonstop. Remember, people, I said that when you have people like that and they're not held accountable, well, let's face it, accountable is a bumper sticker now, isn't it? We should all just get our accountable bumper stickers. Let's just all order them, because that's what it means now, Bob. It's just a bumper sticker. Let's hold them accountable. Where's that bumper sticker? All right, thanks. Here's a bumper sticker that says accountable. Now we held you accountable.
Okay, you're accountable. Move along.
And that's what I mean. But people like Robert Spencer, who are gearing up, I mean, I just looked at some of his stuff on his site, and I just saw how many books he had out, and the fact that New York Times even reviews his crap is suspect to say the least. But I mean, he's a bona fide pathological liar. And yet, Bob, and yet, he's training everyone. He's training everyone in the right wing. I don't know if people know that, but yes, he's training pretty much everyone in the right wing about how to handle the Islamic issue. And he's doing a pretty damn diabolical job at it. Because every time you turn on the radio now and you hear all of these Islamic talking points, they come from Robert Spencer.
Son of a... And of course, underlying all of this, David, is the fact that they are very effective at getting goons like this guy's words out.
Right, but here the other thing is that when you lie to this degree, when you lie about what the imam said. By the way, I thought that with that interview with the imam and Soledad Bryan, I don't watch CNN, I don't watch any of that, but the clips that I heard, I was very impressed with that guy, and I hope he keeps up that line. And I got to applaud someone like that. I don't know if you heard the interview with Soledad Bryan, but wow, Bob. And yet they're using those as talking points, as that this guy is a radical Muslim. See, it never ends, people. It never friggin' ends. And this is what I mean by the fact that they want to create an elaborate distractocracy that we've never seen before. And, Bob, it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not going to stop, people. It's not going to stop. They want to keep going one distraction after the next. And here's the other thing, Bob. Did you notice that they're going faster and faster than ever before?
Yeah, like light speed.
This is why, since the Obama administration is not going to do anything about it, that's why I'm going to spend Monday morning just calling all the TV stations, because I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to see anybody get hurt, and I don't want to be the person that just like sits back and says, "Wow, they're burning mosques. Wow, they're burning churches. These stupid news networks." This right here. You know, Bob, if it was up to me and I lived in the city, I would organize people to put. And if there was an actual an incident that was that happened on American shores, I wouldn't feel guilty about saying I think we need to chain the doors of news networks and tell them no more incitement of riots, because that's where we're at, people. That's where we're really at. We're right at that cusp. We're right at that cusp, Bob. And these news networks, they're not going to back down, because they're going to look, they're going to say it's too big of a story. It's too big of a story. We can't. They're junkies, Bob.
They are. And again, you kind of take me back to the what's the point in spending that money and giving it to News Corp? You know what I mean?
They're laughing at us. And you know one last thing before I go. And I was thinking about this today, and I think this sums up how people look at politics. How the right wing looks at politics in general, and I took a bit of that from watching this movie 1% with Jamie Johnson, who probably is never going to make another documentary again because his family got to him. But Bob, that is one of the most powerful riveting movies you will ever see. And you won't see it on TV, because the fact is that Jamie Johnson took Milton Friedman to task. He took his family to task. He took all the wealthy families to task, because he couldn't understand this 1% theory and wealth management and going to wealth seminars and the investing for decades and decades on end just to be the family with the most money. And but one of the things that really caught me was the fact that I think that liberals and progressives really need to pay attention to this bit right here. But Republicans and politicians that are running now, Bob, they look at this as a hobby. And politics for us, that's increments of survival.
That's pretty daggum profound, David. Increments of survival.
If you think about it, Bob, it's where we're at right now.
No, I think you're right.
I'm going to let people marinate on this weekend, and when you pay attention and you see how these Republicans are acting completely out of line and just completely crazy, just think about their families, and just think about that this is just like a fox hunt for them.
Somebody blow the horn. Jesus Christ. But it...
I mean, if you think about it, Bob, I mean, that's the other thing. That's the other thing that a lot of liberal writers and journalists don't understand. They don't care if they get the House. You know why they don't care if they get the House? They just care if they get some seats. They just care because they can run back to their supporters and say, hey, look what we did for you guys. You see what we did for you? Do you know what we're going to do for you in 2012? And if 2012 doesn't happen, you know, we were so close, guys. What about 2016? We can do it.
And what you're tapping into there, David, is the toxicity of the fact that, and I don't know that I've ever heard it described this way.
Yeah.
But what you're describing is the toxicity of a political system that is commercialized. You know, we talk about corporate money and dirty money and the sickening need for fundraising, but we never describe the fact that the American political system is just plain old-fashioned commercial. And all of this is the natural outgrowth of a capitalist political system. And I'm sure the Goombas or Gomers or whatever on the right would say, well, that's right, because Jesus loves capitalism. But really, is there anywhere in this country where you can sort of get out of the shitstorm?
Yeah.
And hide from the ruthless hand of the unseen, the ruthless unseen hand of the market? Is there anywhere that cynically I would suggest that if there is, they are damned few and far between?
I mean, and that's the thing about it, Bob, is that. The right wing has such a diabolical stack deck for the working people and for people who are supporting Democrats that if my biggest concern is that Democrats don't understand that they really have to get progressive and quite liberal really, really quick. Because what I see happening right now, the buildup, what I was listening to on the radio with the books, the propaganda, the movies, oh, Bob, wait till we get to a prayer meeting Wednesday when I have to tell you about this. I mean, it's gonna blow you away, because the fact is that, remember I said that the Christian culture war and the propaganda, they're building it in such nefarious ways you can't even imagine. I mean, they've got the money, people, and they've got the money from the books, and they're going to invest it in every single level of propaganda you can imagine, all of these bestsellers. And that's part of the problem is that the Democrats, they don't understand that the working class and the working people are on this thread, and meanwhile they've got Brooks Brothers suits.
Precisely. Or maybe just bespoke, you know, handmade.
But before I go, just to put this out, the ripple once again, what I thought about today was the fact is that Republicans and Republican family, dynasty families and politicians and people who get into politics, they do this for a hobby, a sport, And for the Democrats and working class, it's for increments of survival.
Hang on to that one. Work with that one, David.
All right, Bob.
All right, you have a good weekend. Take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. Email coming in. I'll go right back to the phones in a second. Email coming in from our buddy Andy in California. He says, PG&E are bad actors. I drove by the PG&E disaster last night in San Bruno, saw the flames, and smelled the gas. You could smell the fumes and feel the heat from roughly 5 miles away. PG&E wants to eliminate public municipal utility competition in California, as you mentioned. And that wasn't so much me as it was Marty. The ballot initiative PG&E pushed would have required two-thirds supermajority to permit a municipal utility to raise funds to expand. Fortunately, it lost. Amazingly, this wasn't the first ballot initiative they funded with big money, and it won't be the last. Your listener mentioned $46 million. They do the same on local ballots around the state to stop the spread of public municipal utilities. A few years ago in Sacramento and environs, PG&E successfully flooded the airwaves and mailboxes with propaganda to stop SMUD, the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, from expanding in the Central Valley of California so they could exploit the locals with their service. PG&E won that one. PG&E wants monopolistic control of California and will stop at nothing to get it. Money is no object for propaganda. They are bad citizens, bad for the state, and bad actors. PG&E has plenty of money for propaganda, but still can't seem to dig into their pockets to pay for maintenance and upgrades. When will the people wake up? SMUD and the other municipal utilities do a great job. We control them, the people, the commons, and prices stay reasonably low with lots of alternative energy initiatives. Thanks, Andy. Ron and Raleigh adding in some more numbers. PG&E's net income after dividends last quarter was $333 million, or 86 cents per share. And not a dime of that could go into making sure that 62-year-old high-pressure gas lines don't corrode, come apart, and blow the hell up. Ron and Raleigh also noting what nobody tells you is that the invisible hand of the market is all thumbs. It couldn't find its ass with both hands at high noon in a hall of mirrors. Sorry. Deadly serious, but hanging on to that one. Let's get that again. The invisible hand is all thumbs. It couldn't find its ass with both hands at high noon in a hall of mirrors. Amen. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's really good. I'm very nice to talk to you. It's been a long time since I've called in, I have to say. This is Alan calling from Miami.
Hey, Alan. I thought I recognized your voice.
Really? After all that time? Quite amazing. It's the first time I'm trying to call in via Skype, and it seems to work.
So far, so good.
So good. Yeah, that's great. Just tuned in and, you know, got caught up in all the stuff you're talking about on several different levels. First of all, I just wanted to mention that when I tuned in, you were talking about, of course, this crazy guy in Gainesville and so forth, and all that represents. But if I may preface that, there's an event somewhat tangentially related to what you were talking about coming up this weekend, start in Miami. Actually, it's the beginning of an 11 or 13 city tour here. I don't know if you've heard about the Move to Amend, which is an attempt to address the issue of corporate personhood in America and all of the...
I have followed some of that, yes.
Okay, well, for what it's worth, if you know people are interested, it's movetoamend.org. I'm going to be one of the speakers at the Miami kickoff event in Florida, and there are going to be, I think, like a number of other sites around the state where they'll be having it all during the next 2 weeks. And it's about time we address this issue. Corporate personhood is just, it's sort of the icing on that cake of all this other stuff you're talking about of the problems of the corporate domination of our society. And one of the effects leads directly or indirectly to a guy like you have this in Gainesville is the dumbing down of America.
Oh, hear, hear.
Pardon?
I said, oh, hear, hear.
Yeah, the dumbing down of America, and at the same time, while dumbing it down, the glorification and the constant rebroadcasting of that dumbed down view of society. And so what I see, what my take, I mean, I'm not the main speaker. I don't know at these events in Florida anyway. The main speaker is going to be David Cobb, who I don't know if you know who David Cobb is.
Right off the top of my head, no.
Okay. David Cobb's a long time, been a lawyer for a long time, and he was connected to an organization called POCLAD, which has to do with the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. He's been doing stuff with them for, as far as I know, decades, and he was the 2004 Green Party candidate for president. Partly because of the positions on corporations. And so this group that's getting together for the move to amend is about as ecumenical a political group as you're going to find within mostly progressive realms, because it includes groups like DFAM and the Progressive Democrats and a group called the Alliance for Democracy, After Downing Street, Velvet Revolution, Backbone Campaign. A number of different groups are coming together to support this. And I was just on the website looking at some of the people who signed up for the pledge to try and work against work for something that will change the whole idea of corporate personhood. And there's an amazing cast of characters on that list, including such people as Rabbi Michael Lerner, Howard Zinn, Jeff Cohen. I mean, it's really John Nichols is on there. I mean, lots of people on there, and it's just something worth – it's a movement at least worthwhile to look into. If it's not even a question of, you know, whether it's going to succeed or not as an amendment to the Constitution, at very least it'll bring up –
Well, is this the same amendment that Donna Edwards has put forward?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
This is this other group. I think the other one has to do with limits on spending specifically, which is fine. There's nothing wrong. The more, the merrier. But in this case, it has Bill McKibben, it has Bill Fletcher. I'm just looking at some of the names.
Yeah, it sounds like a who's who.
Yeah, and I don't know if you know Bruce Gagnon.
That name does ring a bell.
The Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He set that up years ago when he was living in Florida at the time where I'm from, or I'm living, and I got to know him back then when he was setting that thing up. He's up in Maine now or something. Anyway, but my contribution is I'm not going to be like the main speaker for this. There's going to be a number of speakers, including the mayor of South Miami is going to speak. It's going to be held at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here near South Miami, in Miami. And my take on it is one that's something that we have shared on a couple times or so before. It's sort of an anthropological view of it. What I see the damage done by corporatization and the corporatization of our society is that what we're talking about is a very deep level of destruction of the historic origins of culture itself. In other words, in a very short period of time, what the corporate domination and power, when it's come together and concentrated, has done, it has derailed the millennial-old record of growth of culture, the passing down of information and knowledge and customs from one generation to the next. We have a group of people who today think they are so much sophisticated and more advanced and civilized than our forebears who used to live in the caves and on the plain, because we have access to all of this technology and this information. Yet you shut
that can be a rapidly proven false assumption, can it not?
Yeah, you shut off the power for a month and you begin to see it skin deep. But not only is it skin deep, we have less ability to survive. Because we are so dependent on stuff being fed to us and given to us. You ask most people, where does the food come from? Well, it's from the supermarket.
Bingo.
We don't know.
Where
does
the electricity come from? Wall socket.
Yeah, that's right. And so what the corporations have done for us with human culture, it has taken away. When the family farm started to die, the previous two centuries, but largely in the 20s and 30s and stuff like that, we began the large-scale breakdown of understanding of how to grow food. Most people don't even know how to make food that they get from the supermarket. They buy a prepackaged bowl of flavors and all the junk and all the toxins and all the flavorings and petrochemicals that are in there, wouldn't know how to put it together in a helpful way if they had to. But no, that doesn't even lead to the fact that, you know, most people wouldn't know how to spend the time to cook or prepare or buy or shop. People don't know how to grow this stuff. And what the raping, the actual raping of the land by these mega corporations, ConAgra and so forth, what they have done here and abroad is just obscene. You know, this business about seeds that have patents, and they're forcing you to put in, those Roundup Ready seeds.
The Frankenfish thing that I talked about a few nights ago just had me standing on my head.
It's unbelievable. And we don't notice this angle of it. There's the whole political side, which really desperately needs to be talked about. Unfortunately, we don't have allies in the Democratic Party, I'm sorry to say. I'm not saying no allies. I'm saying there are a few people there, but there's no will. I want to get to the political side. The fact is that we don't realize how it's undermining human culture in the same way that it's undermining the rest of the planet. In other words, we have distanced ourselves from the ability to put together experienced and wise human beings in the same location. Or even online, what the hell? But at the same place to be able to contact one another and talk about things in a rational way. So, gee, what should we do which will help us all? We can't do that anymore.
Well, but okay, Alan, hold on a minute then, because you just said something that I think is very important. What can we do to help us all? If our growth has been stunted in any particular area, I would submit to you that it has been stunted in that sense of common good, that sense of the commons. We, as liberals, as progressives, as whatever we care to call ourselves, decent human beings, we do have a sense of the value of the commons. The other side thinks that the commons are just the short form of communism.
Oh, ain't that well said, my friend. And that's what the whole battle against communism was to stamp out humanity wherever it reared its ugly head. Anything that smacked at that. I mean, as you know, the people who think the McCarthy era is over are mistaken. We are still living that. Our nation was deprived of, and I think we can calculate this, I'd say 2 to 2.5 generations of people who were brought up understanding that it's okay to question and criticize. In other words, we have people today who think that questioning or criticizing is unpatriotic. That, to me, is a legacy of the McCarthy era attempt to get rid of, as you say, the commons. They were so pissed off at FDR, and they had vowed, this group of people had vowed that they were going to turn back whatever FDR did, and boy, did they go to work at it. And we're looking at the results today. And the basic controlling of mainstream media was an essential ingredient for these folks.
If you go back to the Powell memo in 1972, you find that it is the Powell memo speaks in generalities. But
please enlighten me on this.
If you Google it, Alan, I think you will just sit there. It's not a very long piece. It was
authored by Lewis Powell, who at the time was not yet on the Supreme Court. And he basically charted a course for a right-wing takeover of the country that was done principally by vast sums of money being poured by the corporatocracy into the takeover.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, this really sounds like the plan that I've envisioned. I didn't know it as a Powell memo or anything else, but it's basically what I see having happened and describe it in my own to myself that way. But it's good to know of actual sources about that.
Oh, the whole thing. They meant to do this.
Oh, there's no question about it. And the role of 9/11 in all of this, there's no question about that either. It's so much BS attached to 9/11. So much emotional energy and patriotic identity involved in that. But it's amazing how people get up there. As I was listening to you before, well, you know, why get upset with the Islam because 9/11? Yeah, you know what? People get upset, but no one ever cared about finding out what really happened on 9/11. Can you imagine a crime of that magnitude, the largest security hole in the history of this nation, and there was never a problem?
It was never, regardless of what position one takes with the regard to the rest of it, the absolute fact of the matter is that it was never adequately investigated. Any investigation that has as its jumping-off place the fact that you are going to allow the actors in it to describe those events without being so much as under oath, and that you're going to let two of the principals testify with one sitting on the lap of the other, automatically delegitimizes the entire process.
Well, here's how I take it sometimes. You know, it's somewhat of a defensive measure, which you unfortunately have to be in a society that is more used to enabling the enemy than it is for thinking for itself. You have to be careful about what you say. So I say, look, I don't really care who did 9/11. Let's put that aside for a moment. Whatever theory you believe, whoever did, doesn't matter. I want to know who gave the orders, who signed the work orders, who put up the money, signed the contracts and the checks for the people who were hired and cleaned up the sites in New York, Pennsylvania, and Washington. Because what they did in a short period of time basically was destruction of evidence of crime scene. And so, if you want to find out what happened on 9/11, all you have to do is look into who paid the people to supposedly clean it up illegally. That's it. I just want to know who signed those papers, who hired the people, who told them.
Well, you know, you asked a moment ago who was giving orders, and I realize it's a separate topic or subset. I don't know if you've seen this interview that Kinda Sleazy Rice gave recently.
No.
She said that she was on the phone with George Bush back when he was still down in Florida, down your way, and he'd been reading My Pet Goat Upside Down. Remember that? Upside Down. Yeah. Oh, my God. He got on the phone and said, all right, Kind of Asia, I'm coming back right now. The decider's going to be in the house. And in this article, she says she commanded him and told him he was not allowed to come back to Washington under any set of circumstances.
Those are her own words?
Yes.
Shouldn't there be an inquiry just about her using those words?
Well, yeah.
What? She's commanding who, may I ask? With what authority?
There you go.
Oh, amazing. So the thing is that, I used to play around with trying to figure out this game about why they were playing with the non-investigation, why go to war instead of, you know. And so in a playing who did what game, I decided, you know, I remember from my old days of Dragnet, you know, we used to watching that as a kid, that you'd talk about, you know, when you're looking for a perpetrator of a crime, you look who has the means and the motive, right?
Motive and opportunity.
Yeah, and so I invented something. It had nothing to do with anything. I was just saying, what about, okay, let me pick someone. How about Berlusconi in Italy? Now, here's a person who had just finished shooting demonstrators in Geneva, and he was like showing the world, this is how you deal with protesters and people who disagree with their government. You have to use an iron hand, a firm hand. And maybe, what if he thought, and he would have something to benefit by saying, you know what, United States, you're letting too many freedoms go by. Let me show you, let me create an opportunity to give you a chance to get an iron hand also. And, you know, let's say he got together and paid a bunch of people to do that. I mean, I'm just inventing this out of thin air, right? But I'm just saying, here's a person who had the motive and the opportunity if you want it. And just last week, he was getting together with Muammar Gaddafi, wasn't he, who is now one of the biggest investors in Italy. So, I mean, that's a separate issue. But what I'm just saying is, no, they never made a short list of people who would have had an interest in doing this. They never even went down that road of motive and opportunity and checking off names on a list. They never made a list. They just went to war. They took us to war on our nickel at a time when our economy was falling apart and have us created a culture of never-ending funding for private military interests as we're reducing the effectiveness of the actual military, which is part of the commons, like it or not.
Well, if we can back up for a minute, Alan, you know, you said earlier, I don't know why we're concerned with whether they were Muslims who attacked on September 11th. I agree with you wholeheartedly in that inquiry, and I think we can sort of reduce the inquiry to its absurd nature by observing that no one, and I mean no one, asked what Tony Hayward's religion was when the BP disaster took place. We only ask about religion if they don't speak with an upper-class British twit accent, a southern accent, or happen to have darker than pink skin.
That pretty much sums it up. So racism is being used as a tool, along with fear, to maintain control. Now, here's something that's really a little bit off track, but we'll come back to track. I was looking up something related to what I might want to talk about, the role of culture, corporations on culture, like I mentioned about the changing of our very biology by substituting what we eat for what they want us to eat, or will permit us to eat. And it reminded me of the story of Michelle Obama, who wanted to put in an organic garden at the White House. You know, that little furor that came up after.
Oh, got it. Yes.
Got all upset and,
the high fructose corn syrup industry was in full conniption.
Yeah, right. But what that shows, it shows two different levels. On one level, how vulnerable they are. And we must never forget that. It shows how vulnerable they are, how scared they are that something could come along and grab headlines that they didn't create. They are so used to, and they are so addicted to the fact that what gets in the media, they created in their public relations department, that when something else comes out that doesn't further their interest, they have connections. They can't deal with it. They have to tell us all sorts of lies. That why organic food is bad for you and blah, blah, blah. They invented all of this stuff, and they had the nerve. Can you imagine any time in the past somebody writing letters to the First Lady basically to say cease and desist?
Yeah, but that really did happen. I remember the press release. It wasn't the High Fructose Corn Syrup Association of America. It was the American, Alan, the American Chemical Fertilizer Association or something. We just want to remind the First Lady that chemical pesticides and chemical fertilizers are a bedrock staple of America's heartland breadbasket of food production, and we think her garden would benefit by it.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Oh, I remember. I remember. Because I was screaming.
Yeah. And you know, but it shows on one hand their vulnerability, on the other hand their desperation to maintain an artificial control of what goes on in our minds, a control of facts, which is ironic because they insist that they don't believe in facts. This phony science that is trumped up, you know, every time. Yet there they are, able to do something like that, just in a very sort of kind way, reprimand. reprimand the first lady, and nobody made a big deal out of that. Now you have this nutcase in Gainesville comes along, and he's twisting the entire U.S. media, the president of the United States, the head of the military, twisting around his finger. And with that, as you were saying earlier, with the complicity of the media, I've come a long way all these years. You know, the business that, well, no, he has a right to do what he wants to do, and he has, like hell he does. That's where I draw the line. If we're so foolish to believe that if somebody wants to go and do something crazy like that, that's his right to do it, then how, you know, in the meantime, we're not only arresting or not investigating, we are killing people or renditioning them because one or two people in high places think that they might.
Oh, we've got a brand new Jim Dandy spanking shiny new Ninth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals decision, yeah. Alan, that says the Obama administration is free to claim national security anytime that they want to cover up some dirty business. And right. if you'll pardon me for just a second, let me just throw something out there on that. The thing that drives me nuts about that decision is that, you know, we saw these things happening with the Obama administration 2 months, 4 months, 3 months, 6 months into the administration, and I was critical of it, and I'd get emails saying, yeah, come on, Bob. He's only been in office 4 months. He's only been in office 2 months. He's only been in office 6 months. You know, this stuff's going to take a while to transition through. Well, we're almost 2 years in now.
Yeah, and
that Ninth Circuit decision comes along, and how do we explain that away now?
Yep, and the thing is, so if we just reinforced this idea that rendition is okay for national security, and then we turn around and say some guy who wants to burn Korans in a public place, that we just sort of, the president comes on and talks and says, it wouldn't be nice if you did that. Why the hell not use that against this guy and say, look, you can't do that. You can't do that. You have gone beyond your area of personal freedoms by risking the entire nation with nonsense, unprovable, not connected to fact, nothing else. They have elevated this nutcase. They have elevated the entire concept of nutcase, along with Sarah Palin and all these folks. In the past 2 years, we have elevated nutcase to theorists and directing stuff. I mean, how can we be amazed if Obama can't stare down Republicans in the Congress or corporations, healthcare corporations, pharmaceutical corporations, if he can't even stare down this Jones nutcase? My God, we have become pawns of idiots. We don't have the guts within the Congress or the executive to actually face up to the fact that, yes, indeed, I agree, America has enemies. But they're not people who necessarily fly planes into buildings. They're the people who have the strings on power, on money, are in front of television cameras and behind microphones. There are enemies of democracy almost every place you turn your head. And we're too dumb to know that we should be fighting those people instead of trying to cut deals with them. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit out of here.
No, you're not at all. You're giving my impulse to scream a little bit of a rest, Alan.
Take a break.
Well, no, it's a bumper sticker, you know? If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.
Well, if you're not ready to resist, then get ready to give up and get on your knees.
And see, that's the difference. You have a working definition of resistance. Whereas we are dealing with some segment of the population, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%, I don't know, that thinks that resistance is being pissed off because there's a half a Negro in the White House.
Yeah, I understand. Well, that's that other side. What pisses me off, what gets me more, I must admit, why I get more despair by looking at my so-called progressive and liberal friends, people who were on the same side, on the same line with me many times in the past or many things, that today will come along and say, well, you know, I guess that war in Afghanistan is the right kind of war. After all, we are going to be helping those women.
No, like see, my eyeballs blow right out of my skull when I hear one of those.
And the thing is, so many people are justifying, well, we have to give them more time, as you said. That, to me, and you'll have to excuse me here, but you may have heard this before. Republicans and what they, not all of them, obviously, and we make exceptions for all the good people that exist in and out of the party. But their agenda is a full-fledged corporate agenda. They make no excuses for it. They go for it right at the jugular, as you explained with the that memo before. They go right for the jugular, and they go out. That you can resist. But the danger is that the corporatocracy uses the constituencies represented by both parties. They can use the Republican Party's constituency straight out and just say, let's go marching for this thing that we want, the corporate takeover, everything. The Democrats, in some ways, are worse. They are much worse for the society because we have the wolves, and they are the wolves in the sheep's clothing. Their official job, as handed to them by the corporatocracy, not the good Democrats who want change and everything. I'm talking about the ones who run the show. Their job, their role they've been given, is to take all the good people who could resist, who are appalled, who would like to hold hands and say, it stops here, it goes no further than this. Take all of those people and make sure that they shut up and don't do anything without the finish. That's what they did to Michael Moore in 2004. That's what they do all the time. Anytime there's an impeachment, that's how they stifled and stopped the impeachment movement. That's how they threw a bomb in health care, and instead of giving health care, they gave the best, they didn't give the best plan for America, but they gave the best plan that the insurance companies could still muster up after all these years, one that gave them for the first time legal backing for forcing people to buy insurance from these companies. Instead of teaching people that insurance companies kill as many people as 6 9/11s per year in America, 18,000 people die with insurance, but not coverage of that insurance. So we have 6 9/11s a year. Why do we have a war on terror? Why don't we have a war on insurance companies? Huh? Why don't we go bomb Hartford?
Oh, because it's a self-answering question, isn't it, Alan?
I know.
You know, there are share price again. You know, there are share prices involved.
Right. Take that, Prudential. You're never going to do this again. And then announce today we heard of the high figures who are running Prudential or this guy. And you know, there was no trial. There was no this that. But we know that they were the ones who were in charge. And sure, there was some collateral damage. About 300 or 400 workers died along with them. But you know, we were one step closer to having health care for America. How's that for a plan?
You know, no, that's okay. You know, conversations like this remind me that I'm not insane.
Oh, man, you are not. We need more. You've got to multiply. You are. The problem is, that's another problem, because so many people have begun to question their sanity. That as we slide further and further to the right, what a joke we live in. Now, if you compare it to the rest of the world or the rest of the industrialized world or however you want to call it, to Europe or whatever, we have the two major parties which have really locked up most of politics in this country. We have a far-right party and a center-right party. We don't have a center party or a center-left.
Bingo, party. You know, my other bumper sticker, what left?
That's right. But no pun intended.
Yeah, I know.
There is no left. What are you going to say, Kucinich represents the left? Look, people like Kucinich and Feingold, they are the exceptions that prove the rule. They are the ones who are used to hook people into this addiction.
Well, but beyond that, the fact of the matter is, if you took an Alan Grayson or a Dennis Kucinich and you moved them to Germany or France,
yeah,
they would be centrists.
Right, exactly. They'd be social democrats, maybe, of the center.
Yeah. And you know, as an anthropologist, Alan, you tell me, and because I have a suspicion, what happens when any given civilization gets to the point where it is simply constipated by its own political process?
I don't know if there's one single answer to that, but it's a question I've thrown at students before. Is, you know, when the society becomes dysfunctional and incapable of passing on the simple, necessary, prerequisite knowledge of survival from one generation to the next, it is not capable of sustaining life. That's, you know.
Well, I mean, I think, please indulge my geekiness. You know, I think about how the Mesopotamian early civilizations were the first ones to develop irrigation, and then found themselves a couple of hundred years later, maybe 500 years later, with, you know, terrible erosion and salinization problems, and what looked like a really good idea began to go down the toilet. And their leadership structure was, you know, autocratic.
Yep.
And even that couldn't account for the problems they had. So you have these series of invading cultures that over, you know, how many different cultures were ruled Babylon for, you know, 2,000 years? You move over to the
power. Yep.
You move over to the ancient Greeks, and their democracy was. And again, I guess I'm digressing again. But you mentioned in our conversation a little bit ago, you know, how democracy functions. And that's, along with what left, I guess I can add another to the list, and that's what democracy.
Oh, absolutely.
Because democracy in ancient Athens was developed only as a means of protecting some rich people against the predations of pissed off hungry hordes.
Yeah, the slaves and so forth. Sure.
Same thing happens in ancient Rome, and I guess I'm answering my own question to you, and that is when a culture becomes so hidebound that it can't get its own political business done, it collapses. It might take 25 years, 50 years. I mean, Jesus, you look at the Roman Republic. There was trouble there starting in 143 B.C., and it took all the way to, 23 B.C. For everybody to just sort of hang it up and realize that the Republic was dead.
The problem is that never before were the powers that were creating these kinds of problems and obscuring the social answers to problems, never before were they able to work at the planetary level of destruction.
Precisely. And they never had the ability to control all communications in such a way as to stifle anything but their own toxic message.
Let's face it, their goal is to have us not know how to grow food, so they have to supply our food, and they want to control the entire water supply, because we can go without food for a month or so, but water we can only go a couple of days. They can shut down any place on the planet by controlling water. And you damn well know that's got to be a corporate/military goal of the controlling of the entire planet. Any particular population, shut it down. Make people do what you want. It's might makes right at a new level. And that's what we're looking at. And so the issue of corporate personhood, which has just been given, the Supreme Court ruling of Citizens United has made things so much worse. But people who look at that and say, oh, my goodness, look how bad it was. Well, let's not forget that it was the Supreme Court who gave the phony victory to George Bush in the first place, who added more people to the court. You know, while people are running around worried about Alito and other Roberts because they're scared on abortion, nobody was talking, well, not very many. I was one. And I know other people. Too few people were talking about, we must stop these people because they represent fascism in America. And it's no surprise that the lid was taken off of corporate spending. That was visible.
Well, right, just the same as it was no surprise that the punitive damage award against ExxonMobil for the Valdez, that was gone, done away with. But you see, that's one of the differences. And again, it goes.
We don't have a party of resistance.
Yeah, it goes. Well, it goes back to the media's control, the for-profit media's control of the message. And that is, on their side, they can call us socialists. They can call us fascists. They can call us communists. They can compare us with Pol Pot, Stalin, Hitler, you name them. But if we do it, if we dare to say the word fascism, and bear in mind that our side actually knows what it means, well, then, you know, we're crazy liberals.
Well, but the thing is, I would have to say our side does not include the Democratic Party as an institution. Our side includes some Democrats. But the Democratic Party has never, especially since McCarthy era, taught anybody what fascism meant or gave us any warning signs as the signs were appearing of incipient fascism.
And I would argue to you, Alan, that that's because that's not a sin of omission as it is a sin of over assumption. Just as the framers assumed that there were some things they really just didn't have to say in the Constitution, so too the Democrats and the World War II generation, frankly, thought, you know, we're really not going to have to explain fascism. This is going to live forever. But that's the curse of generational wisdom. You know, you mentioned 9/11. And I'm sure there will be all kinds of, and I mean no disrespect, hoopla around it tomorrow. But it is it's a non-remembered fact that once upon a time, the Alamo was remembered as a national holiday. All over this country, people came out and had parades in the streets on the day that the Alamo fell. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. But that was done because, well, we have to remember this. And there was, a generational assumption that it was worth remembering and it was a must remember. And you can find examples of that in all kinds of cultures. And what we have going on here is a failure, a well-intentioned failure, I would say, on the part of the Democratic side of the political process.
I think you're being too kind. I think that's probably true for a very large sector of them. But the warning signs of this have been coming around for a long time. When Newt Gingrich came around and did what he did during the Clinton era, there were plenty of opportunities to say things, to point out things. With the health care issue, it could have been pointed out. We could have educated the population. We have lost track of the idea of calling a population together. I don't know what you were talking about, something about parades, somebody talking about parades. But I had always imagined, for example, if the Clintons had wanted to actually pass the health care bill they talked about during the campaign, all they would have to do is say, you know what, all of you who are interested in having a health care plan for all of America, we want you to either come or send your representatives to a march we're going to have in Washington on such and such a day, and the insurance companies would have to stick their heads up their butts because they couldn't fight against that. But there is no will, there is no money, there's no way the party as an institution could take a stand that would go against the corporations in such a way that would actually turn to the people to support a measure. Because they always turn to their funders, the people who pay for the election campaign, and say, what do we do next? So I don't know. There were so many warning signs. Dennis Kucinich stood up and for 5 hours in front of the Congress read charge after charge against Cheney. 5 hours, never before in history. This reminded me sort of like one of those Capra films, you know?
Yeah, it was Mr. Smith stuff. It really was.
Yeah, right. All right, he did that. What coverage was there? I was looking in the papers. They were talking about Barry Bonds and this and that. And there was no... He could have been talking about... I don't know. He could have been talking about icebergs for 5 hours. It should have made the news. But no, he was... Charge after serious charge against the vice president, sitting vice president of the United States. And we couldn't get that.
And it was studiously unreported and studiously uninvestigated.
Okay, now the question then comes, okay, so we'll blame the media. Where was the Democratic Party to say, what the hell do you guys in the media think you're doing by ignoring this? Nowhere.
Well, first of all, the Democratic Party was not real happy with the fact that Dennis did that.
Right, well, that's the problem. That's part of the problem. Not only were they didn't care about the fact that it was ignored, too. In fact, they were happy that nobody knew about it. Therefore, they were complicit in the silence. There's no way of...
Well, the way I look at it, everybody that didn't sign off on what Dennis did was complicit.
Well, yeah. So, therefore, I can still contend that we are closer to fascism than we were 2 years ago, because nothing was really has really been rolled back. Oh, a couple of things here or there, but nothing structurally different has been rolled back. The power of the executive remains the same, and has gotten worse. We are now using robot bombers to dump bombs on a country we're not at war with. That wasn't happening, as far as we know, 2 years ago. So we're closer to fascism, and so nobody has warned us, given us the warning signs. They're all over the place. You know them. Your listeners know them. I know them. They're there. They're everywhere. I happen to have a certain sensitivity to this because in my lifetime I've lived in two countries that were under military dictatorships. I know what it looks, tastes, smells like, feels like. And I saw this stuff coming decades ago. I'm not trying to say I'm prescient or anything like that, but, you know, I've looked at warning signs for a long time. I'm saying, where in the society are these warning signs being repeated or echoed or teaching it to a new generation of people? Watch out for this, watch out for that, which is the reason why I got early on involved, for better or for worse, with the Green Party, because at least we were saying those things and aware of those things. We don't have the political sophistication, wherewithal, and money to really do what would be necessary to do about it. But the fact is that at least we're not being duped. We're not sending money and support and making phone calls for people who are enabling fascists, which I'm sorry to say is what the role of the Democratic Party is, to take the people who would protest and make sure they don't. I'm tired of that. I just don't, I don't have any more patience.
And, there, you know, there's, and again, there's a long history of that. All you, if you look back and you think about what Huey Long was talking about during the Depression.
Indeed.
You know, Social Security, such as it was when it was initially passed, was done solely to take the starch out of Huey Long, because he was advocating some serious reform.
That's right. So FDR,
and then of course Huey had to get dead.
In fact. Yep.
Again, I think it's one of those generational things, but there's nothing new in this.
No.
This is the dirty politics that this country was founded on, from the moment that the Federalists.
In other countries where there's a strict censorship, the people at least have a certain healthy cynicism, and you know they poke each other in the ribs and go wink wink, you know, like that kind of thing. Oh yeah, right, great. They told us this, and everybody goes, yeah, I believe.
Well, even the Soviets, you know, they had the Soviet workers had that line, as long as they pretend to pay us, we'll pretend to work.
Exactly. But here in this country, when you say, you know, that Obama's a socialist, people look at one and go, oh, yeah? Wow. You know, where's any? We have no healthy cynicism. It's the destruction of our educational system along with the parallel concentration of the media, which has effectively put the most stringent censorship on this nation, I think, that the world has ever seen. And what the mark of its success is that few people know it exists.
You've created a scenario, or not created, but enunciated one, Alan.
Describe.
Yeah, that works too. Sometimes I get challenged in the midst of all of this for words. You know, me not talk good some days. But
no, too.
It almost seems, and I guess we come back to the theme we were working a little bit ago. It almost seems insoluble. Is it,
yes,
in your opinion, insoluble? If it's insoluble, all you do is sit back and pour a cocktail and watch the apocalypse.
Well, there's some of that, but the thing is, what really gets me is that instead of waking people up, instead of telling people about how many people die because the insurance companies run their health care, instead of telling people why it's absolutely necessary to save the Constitution and the Bill of Rights by impeaching those people who completely defiled those things, well, instead of teaching people what is necessary to maintain any semblance of democracy, we have instead told them to shut up and not talk about it, because it will affect the outcome of the next election, which the outcome of which will not do anybody any good anyway. And so we've dumped people down. That's why there's no resistance. You can't have resistance until you know that there's something worth fighting against. I sometimes like to say it, the right wing understands that there's a civil war going on in America, because they created the damn thing. They have generals, blueprints, battle plans, soldiers, lieutenants, you name it. They got them all, and they consider the other folks, us, as the enemy. and the so-called liberal element of the center-right of America thinks that maybe they have a cold, something's not going right, the economy's not so good, it's been, a, you know, we've had, like, bad winds coming from someplace, but not understanding that we are literally under organized attack. And until we get that, there is no response that will be appropriate to that. Because those people on the other side who are the minority are so paranoid that they think any sneeze is an attack on them. And they overreact because they have the money and the corporate organizing and the ability to overreact. And they can control it all through the media, which they have slowly but surely picked up over the years with the help of the Clintons and others who enable them. We don't have a party of conscience, of criticism, of resistance that is in the mainstream. Now, I'm not trying to sell specifically the Green Party, but I'm saying if it were there, all the things coming out of my mouth, or most of them, or many of them, would be coming out. We need some sort of organization that points the way and says, if we want to get to point B, we have to be able to say what point B looks like. Don't expect to get to a place of equality and tolerance and wisdom and common spaces that are shared and respect for one another and trying to build a world that is good and healthy. You can't get there unless you say, that's where I want to go, and describe what it would look like and say, these are the things we must do as people because our representatives, our representables, are not representing us. They're representing the people who pay for the paid-for so-called electoral system.
Well, I take it then, and I don't know how much you've been able to listen to the program lately, Alan, I take it then that you don't take issue with my refusal to vote for my incumbent Democratic member of the House come November.
No.
I'm doing it because he's actively opposing my family's well-being. Because of his shameless support for mountaintop removal.
Mountaintop removal.
In the Senate race, in which my pro-mountaintop removal Democratic governor is running against a pro-mountaintop removal Republican for Byrd's empty seat, I'm voting Mountain Party.
That's it. That's why I supported Johnson in the past. Things like that. I don't know. But I'm saying that where there are people willing to do stuff, we unfortunately have bought into the idea, as Ralph Nader said, we have constantly, year after year, lowered our expectations of ourselves and of our society instead of raising those expectations. And so we begin to believe that we only have these two choices. How many people tell you, oh, the lesser of two evils is this or that? If we don't do something different, don't expect anything different.
And the converse of that is that doing the same thing over and over again is the definite, and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. Alan, I got to roll because you've got the lines all jacked up here, so I got a feeling folks are going to be responding, which is a very cool thing.
All right, you take care.
Don't be a stranger. I love these conversations.
Me too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
That's Alan in South Florida, and we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Garrett.
Isn't left the turn that Bugs Bunny is supposed to make in Albuquerque?
I think you're right.
Yeah, I've been debating.
No. I took a wrong turn.
I think he I've been debating it. Is it left? Is it right? Because I know he says a direction. I just can't think, you know, ever since Alan said the left, what left, which is very true because that ties into why I wanted to call today. Because about Reed, guess what?
What?
All of the mainstream, power type Republicans in the state of Nevada, guess who they're starting to endorse?
Who's that?
Reed.
No.
Yes. Even the Review Journal, the friggin' rag that is so horrible, they endorsed Bush in 2004, a month before the first debate. Even they are starting to slime on Sharon Angle.
Well, there's really no way. I mean, if we assume for a moment that there are Republicans out there who have functioning brains, There's no way that a responsible Nevadan can look at, and by responsible I mean not a teabagger, not a birther, deather, tenth or fourteenth or booger eater. There's no way you can look at Sharon Angle and go, oh yeah, this is better.
Yeah, I mean, especially since this is, you know, the power structure in Nevada is all insider backdoor deals, you know. I'll rub your back if, you know, if you rub mine. And, you know, the fact is that Harry Reid plays ball because one of the endorsements he's got, Republican endorsements he's gotten, is from the head of the Nevada Gaming Association.
Oh, sure.
Yes. So it's like, you know, that it says as much about Harry Reid being a dog lunch as it does about Sharon Angle being bat crap crazy. Even Wayne Newton went on Fox News relatively recently.
Is he still alive?
Yes, he's still alive. It looks creepy, though. He's had a few too many plastic surgeries or facelifts. Ugh.
Yeah, he raises his eyebrows and Wayne stands on his toes.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, I mean, even Wayne Newton, when made an appearance on Fox News, is like, I'm Republican, but I'll vote for Harry Reid.
Cossack says, I knew I should have taken that left lane at Albuquerque, is the exact Bugs Bunny quote.
Oh, I knew I was. Thank you, Cossack, because I'm not at the computer. I'm being warden to my cat here. So he can be outside for his.
Oh, that explains the. Okay, I thought I heard a little trafficy desert noise.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just like, I mean, because. It's the perfect because there was a poll a few weeks back. I want to say it made an appearance on, like, Olbermann and Maddow that a lot of Nevadans, including a overwhelming plurality of Nevada Republicans, wish that there was a different Republican candidate for Senate than Sharon Angle. The Republican Nevada Republican number was like, I think, 71%.
Wow.
Yeah. Seriously. I think.
Dear Lord, let this creep pass from us. Wow.
Yeah, because I think the fact of the matter is that the people in, you know, people in states like this, they're not entirely stupid. I mean, yeah, they get distracted by BS, and yes, as David put it quite well, the media loves to kick it into overdrive, especially lately, but they realize enough to know when somebody is really crazy. And let's face it, the Tea Party folks have won a lot of Republican primaries, and they're a whole lot of crazy.
But they haven't won that many elections.
Yes. Because they talk about, you know, because when Scott Brown got elected, he's like, oh, this is a tough sign of the Tea Party. One, Scott Brown hasn't been that bat crap crazy. Two, we all know that Coakley ran a freaking horrible campaign. Absolutely horrible. I mean, calling Schilling a Yankee fan, that alone just downgraded her to about pond scum in the state of Massachusetts.
Well, but see, we won't go too far into it, but
yeah.
The Massachusetts thing was not a good benchmark, simply because the candidate was so awful. Yeah. Hey, Garrett, I hate to say it, but I got to roll along because I'm damned and determined to get to everybody.
Yeah, I know. And also, your buddy Rich, he's going to probably win against Notre Dame this weekend, just so you know.
One of the few times in any given year when I root for Notre Dame.
Yeah, because they drove me crazy last weekend. And then Kelly after the
game. Well, that's okay. I'm getting quietly updated on WVU and Marshall. And this is not pretty. So
it's not pretty?
No.
What? Is this a possibility that my alma mater might actually not stink against West Virginia?
You got a real chance of not stinking, them rebels.
Oh, yeah. God. Not like I'll get to see it on TV.
Yeah, 3:17 left in the half, 14-3, Marshall.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What, did they re-recruit Randy Moss or something?
Nice, nice. Hey, Garrett, you have a good night.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
And onward we go. Let's see. Next try. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Richard, Bob.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, it's not easy for me to get to you on the within the hours that you're on the air, so I don't get through to you very often. So
I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention something about Sandra. Actually, I was thinking about it might be nice to get together with her because a friend and I. My friend Gary was going to treat me to a trip to Sacramento to go to...
I've never heard of anyone being treated to a trip to Sacramento.
Well,
no, I'm being a jackass. I'm just... pay no attention.
Yeah, you know, I live in the Bay Area. I'm sort of diagonally across from San Francisco.
Oh, wait. It was Fresno, that parody nighttime soap opera was Fresno. Where they,
what was that about?
Oh, it was a parody of, you know, Dynasty and all of that other stuff. But there was some joke along the way that Fresno was an old Indian word. Smells like Fresno, you know.
Well, I don't know anything. The only thing I can tell you about Fresno is it's in the big Central Valley word.
Well, what we're telling everybody about is my fundamental ignorance of California geography. That's what we're telling people about.
Well,
but you can't blame me having never been there. I'm only learning vicariously through you guys.
Look, come on out and visit.
Well, I'll throw an extra pair of underwear and a bandana and put a stick over my shoulder and put my thumb out on the road. I'm on my way, Richard.
You've already been most of the way here, you know. Your trip to Vegas.
That's true, and that was so traumatic I had to come back and regroup.
I don't know how you survived that. But anyway, there's rail service between here and Sacramento, between where I live and Sacramento. There's a lot of trains, as a matter of fact. California voted to...
be civilized?
Huh?
California voted to be civilized and have trains?
Yeah. California voted to encumber itself to put on regional rail service a few years ago. And we even have special rail cars that were built for that purpose, and they're very impressive. The cars are. They have excellent handicap access bathrooms, restrooms, and they went overboard to try to accommodate wheelchairs, which is quite a, you know, it's quite a trick to pull off because you've got 10 feet of width to work with. On a railroad train.
Yeah.
So, you got to make sure that the seats are wide enough for real people and also can pass wheelchairs down the aisle. So, it took a lot of work. And I'm real impressed by the cars. So, we have dedicated train service between San Jose and Sacramento and a little bit further east. Has at least 8 trains a day, I believe, and then we have trains that run up the Central Valley to Bakersfield. And the Central Valley, for them that don't know, is where all the produce comes from. And it's a long, hot place, and Sacramento's in it. So my friend and I were going to go to the Railroad Museum in Sacramento, and it turned, and I thought it might be really cool to visit with Sandra. But that has to be okay with Sandra. And I don't know how to get together with it. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. We actually got as far as the trolley car museum, and which is about a third of the way.
Oh, that's got to be cool.
Oh, it was. And you know what? So, I'm into trains. I don't consider myself a rail fan. But we went for a trolley ride. the museum has you know, a few miles of tracks on both sides of the property, and so we took a trip on an old interurban car, and that was a technology which used essentially big trolley cars to go from one city to another, and there was quite a network of them in the Midwest. This one was from California. But the thing that was so impressive about it was that they were hauling about maybe 30 people with two 35-horsepower electric motors. So the efficiency is really impressive. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I would love to see people back on the rails.
Yeah, but at this point in time, California's soft underbelly was rather exposed last night, wasn't it? We're going to be hard pressed to do trains before we you know, stop the state from blowing up from 62-year-old gas lines.
Well, my neighbor decided to build a patio a couple of years ago, and he put his shovel right through his gas pipe. Now, his gas pipe's made out of plastic, and that's how it is, you know. It's kind of mind-boggling. But I don't, you know, as far as accidents like that are going to happen. I don't know.
Well, see, I don't necessarily line up with accidents like that are going to happen. When a company like PG&E uses all of its money for share dividends instead of plowing it back into the infrastructure and 200 pound per square inch high pressure gas lines are 62 years old, well, I mean, I guess it is fair to say things like that are going to happen. But the point, Richard, is that things like that oughtn't happen.
That's true. That's true. See, I think we have a different sensibility about it here because of earthquakes, you know. I mean, we have disasters.
Yeah, but shouldn't that make for a heightened sensibility about things like gas lines?
I think so, but it's a strange thing. You know, I grew up on the New York subway. I think, you know, for the first, 22 years of my life, I'd say I spent a 12th of my life on the subway because I lived about 4 miles from Coney Island and, you know, was in Manhattan all the time, and that took an hour each way. And so I got interested in the technology of this thing that I was riding on. And the New York transit system had a lot of safety features. When I came here, I was shocked by the lack of safety on the San Francisco streetcar system, which includes a tunnel, and it included a tunnel at that time. And it's just like there was a lack of escape tracks, you know, storage tracks, places for trains to get out of the way. And that was just, you know, like normal. We have highways that have no alternatives here.
Well, and there's a similarity here. We built there's a stretch of I-64, Richard, that runs from Beckley to Virginia and I-81. And there's a place called Sandstone Mountain. And as interstate highways go, it's pretty much straight up and down. And they built and engineered this thing without ever thinking, you know what? I'll bet you some semi-tractor trailers' brakes are going to fail on this. And they went flying off the highway. And they had to build, you know, those sand pit escape ramps.
Yeah, that's an interesting feature. So, I mean, what would you have done yourself?
Well, I think when you're building on steep hills, you assume that you might need some runaway truck ramps.
Yeah, right. And really,
and you engineer them in. If you go back far enough on that 62-year-old pipe, I'll bet you there's a sticker on it that says "Replace me in 50 years."
Yeah, okay. I said that a bit too glibly. You know, accidents are going to happen.
No, I'm not gooning on you.
PG&E has a really bad record on this kind of thing. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, something came up a few years ago where the state was paying PG&E to trim trees to keep them back from what do you call it, power lines. And they weren't doing it.
But the taxpayers were paying. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And
no. See, we can't go too far into that or I'm going to have an aneurysm.
Well, they lawyered up, by God, and took over a town filled it with lawyers. Because a local, would it be a DA, hauled them into court. There were fires.
Yeah, every now and then you'll find one of these little prosecuting attorneys who desperately doesn't want to get reelected, and he'll do stuff like that.
Yeah, this was a young lady, and it was a rural, rural place, and they took on PG&E, who sent a whole army of lawyers in. I don't remember how it came out. I think they got a slap on the wrist. And you have to pay all this stuff, but the company is like. Oh, well, hell, Aaron Brockovich?
Sure.
Yeah. That was PG&E. That's a corporate way, Well, it from, God, the coal company. Jesus. So, I don't know. How did we get on that subject?
Yeah, I don't know, but I do have
you
to. I was going to say, I do have to run, Richard, because I've got them stacked up and. When this happens, and especially on a Friday, I like to try to get everybody who's online because.
Yeah, great. I just came in about half an hour ago. How's Agnes doing?
Oh, she's doing too much. Every now and then, I like sort of gently tackle her and make her go to bed and rest a little bit. But there's only so much of that I can do before she calls the sheriff to come and get me. She basically does too much until her body tells her to go thee therefore and lie the hell down, and then she does.
Right.
But appears to be doing okay, and thank you very much for asking.
Okay, good. Get to the blinkers. I'll see you later.
All right, take care, Richard. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, so let me ask you one little question. Why is Obama responding to that freak in Florida?
See, the only response in my book, the only response is to just to call the FBI and say, go pick the up.
I know, but the thing is like, I'm just sort of, I don't really understand his, the choice of doing that. It along with all the rest of them, now it's starting to look really bizarre.
Well, that's only because it is.
Okay, because I'm thinking, am I, out of it a bit? Because I'm really sort of, it just seems really over the top at this point. And it's making us, our country, look
stupid.
Really beyond ridiculous. I'm telling you, it's just disturbing.
Well, I was watching the chat room a little bit ago, and Zatoichi in the chat room said, the riots are getting really ugly in Afghanistan.
Yeah, but are there some copycats now too?
Oh yeah, it's spread sort of like kudzu or some sort of disease. First, there was the crazy guy who doesn't have a church anymore, who was going to privately burn a Quran in Tennessee and videotape it and put it on YouTube, just like I said that the crazy bastards would when I was on the air Wednesday night. And then there's the fine folks at the Westboro Baptist Church. Shirley Phelps Roper, apparently Fred is too crazy to be let out in public anymore. He's gone Reagan on him. Shirley Phelps Roper has said, well, by God, I don't know what the guy in Florida is going to do, but we've burned him before and we're going to burn him again. And she basically accused him of being the copycat because she said they burned him to commemorate 9/11 a couple of years ago and nobody paid attention.
Well, I'm wondering if this is... sort of a byproduct of, well, bear with me, a byproduct of, the lack of accountability at every single level now. You know what I mean? There's no accountability for the various crimes that the government officials have committed. You now have courts saying it's okay for us to rendition. And on top of that, you have domestic squabbles that are... They don't resemble anything. I've never seen anything like this. And I'm just wondering if it's a breakdown of rule of law, seriously.
No, I think it's, it's not an outright disagreement, Sandra. I think that it has become so difficult to accomplish anything for this administration, you know, for a variety of reasons. Obama did his presser today, and somebody asked him about getting Elizabeth Warren into the new consumer protection, the financial protection unit, and they asked, are you worried about getting her through the Senate? And Obama said, I'm worried about getting anybody I nominate through the Senate. And there was kind of a ha-ha, titter-titter, and he goes, no, I'm not kidding. I'm worried about every day because I can't, we have committee hearings, and then the Republicans insist on a filibuster-proof majority, and then when we finally do get the vote, and we beat the cloture, and we finally get the vote, it's 98 to 2. So finish the thought, what I think is there's probably a speculation. There's probably a lot of frustration inside the administration, and they're at a point where do something, okay. And that's a terrible place to be in.
No, but I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but I think you know how they say the head of the fish rots first. I think that the lack of decisiveness and take charge or do anything about what went on before is a problem that's playing out now. I'm sorry, when I sent you that thing about Obama talking about, oh, he don't support the extension of these tax cuts, but he wouldn't promise that he would veto it. Well, fool, that is the only choice you have in this particular issue. Yet, it still wasn't clear. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, wouldn't a veto promise sort of say to the Democrats in the House and the Senate, look, I've got your back?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That is what he can do in his position. He could have said, no matter what, they send that to me, I'm vetoing it. He could have said that, but he didn't. And so I'm like, huh? You're against it, but you're not going to acknowledge the power that you have to actually put a stop to that? So that just leaves me just shaking my head thinking, well, what the hell does that mean? And there's hundreds of positions that are gone, even unappointed, let alone confirmed. The bureaucracy is full of, you know,
yeah. It's
Republicans.
It's full of moles.
And there doesn't seem to be any housekeeping with the bureaucracy which the executive branch is wholly in charge of, Bob. We're not talking about, you know, it's just incredible to watch. I'm like, no. If you have a clue about how this government is supposed to work, all his talking don't make no sense. I'm sorry. I understand his frustration at the Senate, but, you know, he could do a lot that he's not doing. So I don't, you know, I'm not feeling that explanation.
Well, I don't, nor am I, and I don't know how much of the nation is, but I sat there and sort of, it's hard not to feel for the guy sometimes, because you know, here he is talking about and he was trying really hard today, but of course he got all wonky, but he was trying to talk about the fact that we're talking about $50 billion worth of infrastructure. And I don't recall in the time that I watched him mentioning the big blow up in California, in San Bruno. And then he says, you know, look, we're talking about giving $100,000 to everybody who makes, to every millionaire in the country, and that adds up to $700 billion over 10 years. And that should be enough to convince people. And there's an argument that it is because, there's a majority of Americans who don't want to see those Bush tax cuts extended for the rich.
What is what he just said is like, yeah, why don't you just say you're going to veto it? You know, we're past what Americans want. We know what the majority...
Yeah, maybe be a little cute about it and say, well, you know, I would like to remind people that I do have a veto pen.
Well, I don't really know, but the whole idea that he's arguing with himself about, oh, these tax cuts and on and on and on, it's just really bugging me because I don't, once again, like we said before, it doesn't help with the confidence level.
And see, the question, the way the question was put to him today was kind of disgusting too, Sandra, because once again, it was some member of the Johnny on the spot, the Washington press corps, you know, fresh off a three martini lunch probably, who said, well, Mr. President, isn't there some hope of some sort of compromise with the Republicans where maybe we could just extend the Bush tax cuts for two more years? And, of course, I'm watching the television, tearing at my hair, sitting in sackcloth and ashes and all of that stuff, and I'm screaming at the screen going, because, again, he started into this sort of wonky answer, and the answer is, if we extend them for two more years, in two more years we're going to have this fight again because the Republican Party is not going to change.
No, I don't even understand. You know, the whole idea that they've gotten into the sort of media meme, a continuation of this for 2 years. See, I get back to the question of Congress will have to do something in order to make that happen, right? Because reconciliation means that things will only last for 10 years. That's the trade-off you get when you push things through that way. Well, 10 years are up. Now, if they want the tax cuts to be extended, they're going to have to be proactive. And if they are proactive, he has the veto.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what is the hedging about then?
That I...
And see...
I'm at a loss, Sandra. I can't give you anything approaching an intelligent answer because it's the truth.
Well, I'm not being rhetorical either.
No, I don't think you are.
Yeah, I'm just sort of like, this is just, well, you know, and
then, I mean, there's a million answers. One of them is, listen, there was a deal struck when this tax cut was passed that these tax cuts were going to be finite in nature, that they would sunset, and we're going to stay with, I believe, you know, I think we should stay with the intent of the Congress. Because that goes back to what I said a couple of minutes ago. Did anybody, when John McCain was saying, you know, remember, when John McCain was still his own creature, and he was saying the tax cuts were a bad idea, did anybody think that in this sunset clause that the Republicans wouldn't be back screaming for their extension?
Well, not only that, but see, the problem also is that he wants a portion of it to continue and not the rest. You see what I'm saying? And I think that's where... The stumbling block is because in order for him to get some of them extended, he's going to have the Congress act. And so they may send him a bill saying that the other ones are extended, but so are the rich ones. And what are you going to do about it? You see what I mean? This is just the other scenario that plays in my mind.
Well, and one more for me is that all of this hedging and hemming and hawing is kind of a hallmark because there was one of those moments today where he said something, and it was like this, the most important thing about our economic situation is, and then it was like beat, beat, beat. And there was this There, it was like something out of the Edgar Allan Poe. It was the telltale
And maybe
this is getting down into too much minutia, but it's almost, and I hate to even say this, it's almost like he knows he is not putting all his cards on the table. It's almost, Sandra, like he knows he is not being completely candid with the American people.
Well, but the thing is, though, you still have the people who are, like, trying to support him, the sort of 12 different moves and Jedi, like Tom Hartman today. I have to say, I'm like, dude, you know, just coming up with the most outlandish possibilities for how Obama is behaving. I'm just like so over it. It's like, no, this fool is just trying to save as many seats as he can. There don't be no reason or rhyme to it. You know, I'm sick of people applying this kind of masterful strategy, you know.
I do, and you know, I am supportive of it because I recognize the realities that the alternative in 2012 is terrifying. And by the way, if you want another one of those wake up screaming moments, News Ninja Gene, who gets up every morning and reads the entire internet, sent me something from Watching America, and this comes from Die Welt in Germany. Here's a headline, Sandra. The Bush clan eyes the White House.
Oh, shoot, that must have... No, see, that just is... That's our mantra, ain't it?
Yeah. Voters have made their peace with George W. Bush, which is all the more reason for Brother Jeb to possibly run against Obama.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, I don't know. I would normally think that, yeah, that's a joke. No way. But I have no idea what's going on with Obama, mainly because he doesn't seem to be willing to attack the big problems that are just staring, like the housing thing. I don't know if you read Scheer's article.
No.
No, I mean, and it's just not just him, but it's just in general. Like I've been talking about, the sort of overhang of the empty housing. And every time the banks put a few back on the market, the values just keep dropping. I mean, there's no bottom. So there's no spending if people can't have equity in their homes in this country. And none of this tax cuts or...
Right, and no, there's not going to be any home equity unless people have jobs to pour equity into their homes.
Right, so demand, he doesn't seem to want to deal with any of the demand side of this equation, which I, for the life of me, cannot figure out what the hell is up. Haven't we done this supply side shit for the last half a century?
Yes. Yes. Oh.
You know, with beginning with Kennedy and his fucking supply side tax cuts, and from there it just continues? Anyway, I don't know. I'm just so worried now. You know, I'm worried now, really. I'm starting, you know, I know I talk a lot of bullshit, but I am starting to get concerned that they will lose the house. Good Lord.
I'm worried about all of it.
You know,
if there's any, consolation in that, there's it comes from the old political canard that truism that there's only two ways to run an election: unopposed and scared to death. And I'm scared to death. And that's the thing that keeps bringing me back, Sandra, is that I recognize that as frustrating as this Congress has been, and as this president has at times been.
Oh no, it can get worse.
It can get worse. I mean, there is audio out there as we speak from, which clown is it? Representative Lynn Westmoreland, Republican from Georgia.
Please tell me that she ain't related to that general.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
He.
Oh, Lynn, okay.
Yeah, one of those names. He says that if they take control of the House, well, this is the quote. If government shuts down, we want you with us. We want you with us.
Are we talking about that again?
We got to have you because later on you will call us and say, look, I didn't get my check. Daddy can't go to the VA. You know, the national parks are closed. We need to be sure that you're with us because let me tell you this, all Americans need to understand. We need to understand this, and I hope you can help share this analogy with people. Just as when you talk about what is going to possibly happen, you know, I was unfortunate to cut myself with a chainsaw. What? I don't know how many of you have cut yourself with a chainsaw. Whew. Chainsaw is not the cleanest instrument if you're going to cut yourself. Dude was drinking. Yeah, he said, this is going to sting a little bit, and it hurt like crazy. But you know what? If he didn't clean out that wound, it would have never healed. I would have got gangrene. I would have died from it. And what has happened with this country, we have put Band-Aids on things that need to be cleaned out. It's going to take some pain for us to do the things that we need to do to right the ship. He is talking about shutting down the VA. You're right, Sandra. Things can get worse.
Not only that, but it just reminds me of their whole show. Their whole tired act is so disgusting. It reminds me of, I don't know if it was Mellon, one of them fools who worked for Hoover, you know, liquidate labor, liquidate everything. Liquidate, liquidate, liquidate. It was one of the Treasury secretaries in that period. You know, all about, yes, now's the time to just sort of bleed the system and clean it up. You know, that whole mentality.
Yeah, more drownings in more bathtubs.
Which means death. And now we're talking when they want to purge a system, It never is purging of the capital markets, though. Have you noticed that? Which desperately needs to be liquidated. You know what I mean? It's never that. Now they're talking about the rest of the safety net. I mean, so that's, you know, I can only be flippant for so long, but at the end of the day, you know, I got to think, oh, no, this is not good. So, you know.
I know.
I guess I have to vote down the sheet, you know. Because I'm looking over here in California with these horrible women who are poised to take office, and it's just sort of like...
Oh, the Carly and Meg show?
Yeah, and it's just like that Meg. You know, she's a racist freak. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, is this really going to happen? So, I don't, you know, I mean, I don't... I think we could wake up in November and just... The only thing we'll be looking forward to is that cat food commission. That'll be going on, too. So
do you prefer Little Friskies or, no, I'm sorry.
No, I like the ones where you can open it up that's fresh.
Yeah.
But you have a little white cat on the cover.
Right, yeah, that's the stuff. Yeah, Sheba.
Yeah, that's for me. If I got to go out like that.
Jesus.
Yeah. Anyway.
Tuna.
Oh, my God. Well, no, I got to say this before. Listen, that shit that they did on the football field was, like, right on. Their little, we're unified.
Yeah, them fingers in the air?
Yeah, the union action. You know, the media was just on a hate run. How dare they? You see what I'm saying? It was really awful.
Hey, look, the for-profit media doesn't give a damn what union it is. Look, they hate them all.
That's the thing, but it was just kind of, it was hilarious. And I'm thinking, well, more power to you, you know. But they were not happy about that. How dare they for opening? Blah 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 blah. And the fans.
Oh, I know. They were still hissing. They were still hissing this morning on SportsCenter.
Well, that horrible Al Michaels, who's some sort of right wing pig, you know, he had to snort out some comment.
I was waiting for him to call, you know, Drew Brees a communist or something.
Oh no, but so I'm just thinking, you know, I couldn't have been more happier. I was really shocked.
Well, thing is, if there's anybody out there, and I don't know if you know this or not, but I. Well, not this part. I've been in the headquarters building of the AFL-CIO.
Mm.
You do know that the NFLPA, the NFL Players Association, is a member of the AFL-CIO, right?
Oh, okay.
Gene Upshaw was a member of the board of directors, and whoever the president is now is probably a member of the board of directors.
Yeah, it's some lawyer.
Right.
Know.
You know, the NFLPA could do more for organized labor in this country probably than any piece of legislation that could get passed. If they would get out there and get noisy and cough up some money and get in the media and talk about the value of union membership.
Well, the thing that's interesting is that all the sort of derision and put downs from the sort of sports media, I think, is misplaced. I think a lot more people can identify with union solidarity than they would like to have us believe. That's all. I was surprised.
But wait for it. I mean, I saw, you know, NFL players facing a looming lockout.
Yeah, lockout, though. This is what they need to hammer home, a lockout.
Wait till it happens and the meme changes, Sandra, to greedy NFL millionaires not happy with their millions.
No. I have to say no. On this one, no, I don't know. Anybody who wants to strike and hold their ground, I don't care if they're rich athletes or mods at this point. It's just the idea of some union exercising some strength in this country.
The one place where scab labor ain't going to cut it for the United States of America is the NFL.
Right. And I just think, you know, these disgusting owners, I mean, they may not have the public on their side like they're assuming. That's all I got to say. I could be wrong. I really could be, of course.
But I hope you're right. I hope you're right, Sandra.
You know, I don't think that it's a closed option, since the owners are the ones who are desperate to make the players have less.
Look, union busting is in fashion, and don't think it's not in fashion in the NFL as well.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just, anyway, that was a bit of a surprise, a pleasant one at that. But if it takes these rich unions, I don't care.
Somebody stand up.
Exactly. Anyway, Bob, I'll let you go.
All right. Have a good evening, Sandra.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. See, that's one of the reasons we have to pay attention to the sporting metaphor in the U.S. Not that I'm preaching or anything, but it really, really is. Just before I go back to the phones, I read to you the quote from Lynn Westmoreland. It is not going to have half of its effect with it just being out there with me having read it. This you gotta hear. This is Rich.
I'm here to tell you what happened. The government shut down.
Listen to him clapping about shutting down the government. Again, the background noises are important, just like the silences between the notes in music. Listen to the applause. This was, by the way, at the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Talk about a misnomer. Faith and Freedom Coalition. Faith in what? Faith in the fact that this government will be okay, if that veterans needing medical treatment will be okay if the godforsaken Republicans shut down the VA? Freedom to what? Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose? Is that their faith and their freedom? Not that I'm being preachy. Pay attention to this. We're almost out of time. This man is talking about yearning for, turning off the lights and masturbating over a governmental political apocalypse. This is what the GOP wants. Every time you get pissed off at Obama, every time you get pissed off at the Democrats, remember, it can be worse. And with all due respect, there's too many people out there who are fragile as it is, who will be left laying in the dirt if we decide that burn, baby, burn is okay. That's the problem. But listen to these evil bastards.
Because let me tell you this, and I think this is what all Americans need to understand. We all need to understand this, and I hope that you'll kind of share this analogy with people as you talk about what's going to possibly happen. You know, I was unfortunate to cut myself with a chainsaw. I don't know how many of you have ever cut yourself with a chainsaw.
Oh, apparently the necks have all cut themselves with a chainsaw. Oh, I done. Did you hear that?
Chainsaw is not the cleanest instrument if you're going to cut yourself. You've got bar oil, sawdust, other things in it. And so when you go to the doctor, and the doctor tells you, I've got to clean this out, and it may sting a little bit.
Ha, ain't that funny when you get cut with a chainsaw and the doctor says you're going to clean the wound out? Ha, ha, ha. You know, it's even funnier when they look at you and say, where's your insurance card? And you say, ain't got none. They say, go die, MF-er. That's real funny.
The doctor tells you something's going to sting a little bit. Grab the sheets as tight as you can and get your best grip. He said, this is going to sting a little bit.
So what he's telling us is that America, under the Republican Party, is going to hurt like crazy. And the thing is, they're sadists. So like I said, they'll be masturbating while we hurt. Okay? Let's get square on that.
But you know what? If he had to clean out that wound, he would never do.
See, Barack Obama has now gone past being a Muslim. He is gangrene in America. He ain't black anymore. He's green. Jesus Christ. Are you scared? You know, I don't sit around wetting my pants worrying about some 6 foot 7 inch Arab with a portable dialysis machine living in the cool, in the air, the naturally air conditioned comfort of a cave in Pakistan. I'd wake up 3 o'clock in the morning with the sweat rolling down my head over these dirty bastards. These are the people, not a Muslim who wants to be able to worship as he sees fit under the First Amendment to the Constitution. He's not a threat to you. These sons of bitches are threats to you.
I would have an injury. I'd have lost my leg. I could have died from it. And what has happened in this country, we have put Band-Aids on some things that need to be cleaned out.
Absolutely, and I gotta go because Rick Smith is on the way, but just you remember, you are what they want to clean out. Not everybody.